If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Now, for those of you who were downtown on Lakeshore Drive and you're watching the fireworks at Navy Pier, yes, we coordinate with that because you notice the fireworks climax was right at the same point that our theme started.
You know where to go when you need a friend. Just tune that radio to WGN.
That's right.
It's amazing the clout we have.
Right.
Nicely done. Nicely done.
Did you notice how that, the fireworks ended? Just as they're ending, the theme starts.
It's a good thing the mic wasn't on because I was upset because I've been over in the corner taking pictures. And when I sat down, the big finale. Because I was complaining about they were kind of, they were loud, but not really big.
I kind of liked it, though.
Well, I got some decent pictures, and I've posted them.
Ron, do you know how long are they doing this? Because this is...
December.
Just for the month of December?
Yeah, for December.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. And there will be something on New Year's Eve as well.
Yeah, and you're going to have to bring your own firecrackers after that.
Okay.
Don't give him any ideas, please.
He'll do it.
But if you've never seen the display, Johnny took some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And have you posted them yet?
I have. I've posted those pictures, and I've posted pictures of our rainy drive-in.
So go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and you can see all the pictures that Johnny has posted.
Mm-hmm.
And... I think it is so cool that they're doing this fireworks display over the next couple of weeks.
At 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Just for us.
And it runs roughly 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So
it's
longer than the display they do in summer, because the summer display is only about a 5-minute display.
Really?
I think.
Well, it's well,
but what do I know?
Yeah. You just show up, right?
Yeah.
Back to the pictures that I posted. The pictures driving in. Yes, I love taking pictures of the Drake Hotel. I think it's such a beautiful building. And when we're driving south on Lakeshore Drive, it's like right in front of us. And again, we're moving. You know, Steve doesn't stop on the road for me to take pictures. So we're moving along. And tonight, because of the misty sky and the rain, the Lindbergh Beacon is cutting right through. So you see at least three pictures that I posted because I thought it looked so awesome tonight.
Yeah, the last couple of pictures you got of the beacon are just extraordinary.
You should call it the Lindbergh Beacon. Okay. You know, that's actually the name of the beacon.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that, Bob? Don't shake your head on the radio. My goodness. Shaking his head. We cannot hear it rattle.
Now, we did hear the rattles.
It's not loud enough for people to know if it's a yes or a no.
No.
No. Ron, did you know it's called the Lindbergh Beacon? Are you shaking your head now?
I'm shaking my head. I wanted to get a laugh is all.
Oh, golly.
No, I didn't know that.
Because it was on the Palmolive Building, which is behind the Drake Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Playboy Club used to be.
Right.
And that used to swing around. And eventually, when people with lots of money started living on the Gold Coast, they went, we don't like that beacon coming into our bedroom at night. So they shut it down. But now we get to see it and go straight out over Lake Michigan. So when you see the pictures that I posted, it's
really cool.
Stationary.
And again, just go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and you can see all the pictures that Johnny is talking about.
Yes, 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 yes. A quick text from a listener says, how's Johnny's back doing? Well, thank you for asking. Whatever this material is, I'm knocking on it because... Yeah.
On formica?
Yeah. Doing okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you have up and down times, but for the moment...
Yeah, when I'm carrying an 8-foot Christmas tree, sometimes I feel the effects of that. I'm funny, you know. Or when I'm climbing a ladder to hang lights and I go, ooh, my back hurts. I'm thinking, really, should I be doing this? But I do it. And next week we'll post some pictures of... our holiday trees, because we've got 9 trees decorated now. It's all done. And we're going to have a party next Saturday night on the radio.
We will have our Christmas party on the radio next Saturday night.
Yes. Bob, are you a fan of eggnog?
No.
Ron, are you an eggnog fan?
Yeah, sure. I am.
Are you?
Yes.
Now, I'm not talking about the lit eggnog.
The spiked eggnog?
No.
Well, you know, eggnog is eggnog, but spiked is, I'm a fan of that as well.
Okay.
I don't know if we could do that on the radio.
Of course we can. Are you kidding?
Oh, okay. Just between us, then.
Yeah. As long as they're not signing the log, they're more than
that's right.
Julian, nog or not?
No, he's shaking his head. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, Julian did this.
You know, there was a time when we had cameras in this studio. Which was great, because then I had an excuse to buy clothes. Now I don't have an excuse. I could be here in my pajamas for all you people care. But that was fun, because people would go, oh, I saw you make that face. Like, that wasn't good, what you just experienced. And
watching on the web. It's still not a bad idea. It's a good idea.
It was fun. Bob, do you know why they stopped the cameras?
No.
I don't either, because one day they were just gone.
But they still have the lights for every now and then.
Correct.
Something happens here.
Well,
and
Team Hochberg, of course, uses the lights in the,
for videoing.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm talking about live, while you're on the air, your lives. Because we used to tell guests, be careful where you scratch during a commercial break because you're
good
being
advice.
Watched.
I wonder if they'd let you Facebook Live or Instagram Live.
We've done that.
We've done
some most
Facebook
of our New Year's Eve parties. We would do Facebook Live.
Maybe we'll do a little bit of a Facebook Live thing next week.
Okay, we could do that for our party.
Emphasis on maybe.
So, if it's too much work, we won't do it. All right.
Anything involves worky is off the table.
All right. I like that. We got a lot of things coming up tonight. Peggy Brown is her name. She is a toy inventor, and she has invented
toy games
and plush toys and she's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Who knew that Santa's workshop was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin? So she's going to join us tonight, and then Will Byington's going to stop by.
He's coming over here right after he's hanging out at the House of Blues right now, doing some photographs over there, and then he's going to come on over here, hang out with us, and give you tips on how to get some great holiday photos with your cell phone.
Right. And he's got some classes coming up, too, that he'll tell us about. And he's been traveling. Oh, my gosh. That man has been on so many cruises taking photographs in the past 6 months. I mean, I think he is an A-class frequent flyer at this point. Also, this is Car Night with Tom Appel Tom will join us in the midnight hour. He'll spend a few minutes talking about winter driving tips and, of course, talk about recalls and all of the cars that he's been driving, too.
Yep. So that's just a little bit of what's coming up tonight. And you should check us out. Go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and we're posting things throughout the show. Also, check out our blog, which is steveandjohnny.wordpress.com, and check out our YouTube page. Tons of fun videos from some of the guests we've had on over the past several months that have performed in the studio. That's youtube.com/Steve and Johnny Show.
And it's J-O-H-N-N-I-E. Mm-hmm. It's the girl version of Johnny. I was in the grocery store the other day, and the bagger said, I called him by his name because I saw his name tag, and he said, "Hey, you know my name. What's your name?" And I said, "Johnny." And he stopped what he was doing, and he said, "That's a boy's name." And I said, "You got to talk to my mom." He just looked at me like, oh, he was kind of puzzled by that. I said, "Bless your heart. I know. I've lived with this for many, many years."
Should we post some of those pictures or not?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I have been, I don't know what's going on. This week, we have had more packages delivered and just left outside.
Well, how about the 50-inch television that was left outside?
Yeah.
Outside. I mean, like in our driveway area.
But that was interesting because we were getting a bunch of deliveries that day, and going outside and see that big TV screen, but there were people saying, we didn't leave it
there.
Oh,
that was our UPS guy, who's our regular guy. I love this man. The brown truck, I know the sound of the truck. I know the sound of
this
man in our hallway.
She can be in the kitchen, and the sound of the truck will be out on the front street, which is through the house, the living room, everything.
Yeah.
Johnny hears that truck.
Well, what happened in that case was he had opened our hall door, because three steps and you push the door open and there's a basket for all the packages.
Yeah.
And he had put his packages in there. So when we stepped out the door, he was, for some reason, oh no, he rang our doorbell, which he never does. And I thought that
was
unusual.
And it was him and his partner.
Yes. And they wanted us to know that the TV was sitting outside. So when
they're
stepped out,
we didn't leave it there.
They're screaming, that's not us.
That wasn't us.
No, no. And I said, that's okay. That's okay. And then I thought, oh, it's not okay, because we could have used you to help us get it in the house. And I think we were halfway into the house when we realized that there were handles on the end of the box. We were trying to grab this.
Well, but it didn't matter, because we were trying to slide it up a flight of stairs. So we wouldn't have carried it like a briefcase anyway.
I'm sure it was not a pretty sight when we were trying to coordinate it. Even a neighbor came out to help us. She held the door for us. And anyway, we're getting these packages.
So the question is, are you getting the same kind of package delivery that we are, an inordinate amount of packages left outside?
Like rainy day today. There they are in the rain. And all you got to do is push the door, throw them inside.
Yeah.
You don't have to put them down perfectly. Just toss them inside. So today there were like four packages stacked on the stoop in the rain. So the top ones got wet. And then, of course, that happened to be something that was material inside that package. But we've never had this problem before. Maybe it's because they're so overworked and there's just not enough of them to make the deliveries. Because you pointed out the other day that one of the trucks making deliveries was in a rent-a-truck.
Yeah.
Like they didn't even have enough trucks.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was Amazon, too.
Yes.
You know, Amazon has a policy right now where you can give them the drivers a $5 tip with doesn't cost you anything. You can just say, thank my driver. You would think that would be incentive for them to go above and beyond, that maybe they'll get another $5 tip. And if you do that all day long, that could add up to some decent money.
Yeah.
So.
Or maybe they look on the order before they deliver it to see if you checked that $5 tip, and maybe that has to do with whether or not it goes inside or outside.
I don't think so. They may not even know. In fact, if I'm outside sometime and somebody's making a delivery, I'm going to ask them if they know about the tipping plan. I think it's really cool that, Amazon has set aside a couple million dollars and said, when
million.
That is it 10?
Two million.
Well, it should be 10.
And the cool thing, because you as the purchaser don't have to pay anything, Amazon is saying, yeah, we'll cover this. Just check this if you want your delivery person to get a $5 tip.
So I don't know if this is, I mean, to me, it seems unusual this year that things are just piling up outside.
Well, maybe they should have the opposite of that, where you put, take $5 from my driver. Maybe that would help them. You know,
our TV would be down the street at someone else's house if we did that.
That's nice.
And what was the other thing that we heard earlier today on a WGN newscast about some special ordering things for today?
Oh, the one thing that caught my attention was the post office saying, "Be careful about texts that you get telling you they're having difficulty making the delivery, and then you end up, because you're expecting a package, giving important information to scammers out there."
Yeah, I got one of those texts, and I just ignored it because it's like, how do they have my phone number? They don't.
Yes.
So. Well, you had it happen, and they said it's only going to be 3 cents, but you need to click this and give us your credit card number and blah, blah, blah.
I had just placed an order with Macy's, literally closed out the Macy's app. Ding! I've got a text. I go to the text and it says, "We will not be able to deliver your packages because your address is incorrect. Please input the correct information." And I thought, well, now that's really odd. But I figured I just made an order. So I put in the address again. That was followed by, "We need to charge you for this extra step, 3 cents.
And to do that, you need to give us your credit card information.
Right. Give us your credit card number for 3 cents.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, if they had said $3, I don't know. Maybe I would have bitten. I hope not. But I was just caught up in the moment of, how did this happen so quickly?
Julian, did you want to jump in on this?
I mean, I have been getting texts about, like, "Hey, your Amazon package wasn't delivered."
Really?
Yeah. I was actually just looking at my phone right now because it reminded me of a text that said, "You should click on this link to..." And right, I'm used to these things. I'm just like, yep, nope, going to delete that.
But it's worth mentioning it because, again, last week when this happened to me, and we've talked about this so many times with Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau, I still, because I had just placed that order, almost bit. I almost slipped.
We'll take a break. More coming up at WGN. Stay with us. Oh, one of my favorite Christmas songs. Now let's all sing along.
Macy thinks the wife is missing. Didn't ask for her permission. I'm wearing her clothes, her silk pantyhose, walking around in women's underwear. In the store, there's a teddy with little straps like spaghetti. It holds me so tight, like handcuffs at night, walking around in women's underwear.
In the office, there's a guy named Melvin. He pretends that I am Murphy Brown.
He'll say, "Are you ready?" We'll say, "Whoa, man, let's wait until the wife is out of town." Later on, if you wanna, we can dress like Madonna, put on some high shade and join the parade.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
This is Steve King. This is not, I had nothing to do with this song.
But, you know, we have to play the classics.
Yeah.
We've only got two more shows.
Steve, we used to play that at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is a little different.
Well, so?
Oh,
That's Bob Rivers. And if you've never heard of Bob Rivers, do a search, YouTube search. He's got a couple CDs. wonderful CDs,
disc
beautifully
jockey,
arranged.
Right?
Yeah, I think he was a disc jockey. Yeah.
I think he was like in the Portland area, disc jockey.
That sounds
very
right.
popular. And yeah, he.
By the way,
he's twisted.
I'm segueing just a little bit. We're going to be playing a lot of holiday music this week and next week.
Mm-hmm.
And a little later, we're going to play something that a lot of you may know about. We just discovered it, and we were blown away because we were looking for some Hanukkah songs. Because this is one of those years that on Christmas Eve, that is also the beginning of Hanukkah. So as we're looking for Hanukkah songs, we discovered a group that apparently is known all over the place, but we've never heard of them.
No, wait, time out. I've been fans for a long time.
Why didn't you share this fandom?
I don't know.
Well,
it's just a bunch of good-looking guys in New York. So I enjoy their. They do really, really first-class videos.
The group is called 613.
Mm-hmm. Acapella group.
We're going to play some of their things a little later tonight, some of their wonderful Hanukkah songs. Just terrific, terrific stuff.
Yeah, so talented. And seriously, their videos are top-notch. They're really talented.
Okay, should we right now just play
can
one?
Can we?
Okay. Let's see. Julian, see if you can grab... okay, let's do Bohemian. This is a takeoff on Bohemian Rhapsody. And this is 613. Just a little bit of this. It's wonderful.
Is this the eighth night? We light with family. Recall with great pride our escape from great tyranny. Kindle the lights, remember the Maccabees.
How did those five boys lead us to victory?
They stood up against mighty foes with their oil running low.
Now we sing the lights go.
Bow, sore Yeshua.
Judah, our faith was banned. Even Antiochus said no more Torah could be read. Judah,
just a little taste of 613. They are wonderful. And again, you may have known about them.
I've
heard of them till
every
yesterday.
Passover, I look up their songs to see what they're up to. And I said, you, well, of course, they're going to have a Hanukkah song, and they've got a couple of them. Not many songs mention the Maccabees. If you think about it. And their voices are wonderful, too.
But over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be playing Christmas songs, Hanukkah songs.
Mm-hmm.
The only Hanukkah song that we have banned.
Yes.
Is the Adam Sandler Hanukkah song.
It's a favorite. Bob is upset. He's really upset.
I viewed this. Bob, my favorite guitar store, Guitar Works in Evanston.
Mm-hmm.
You go in there. And one of the things they have is a sign that says, no
Stairway to Heaven.
If you play a Stairway to Heaven riff, they will turn off the amplifier. So we're kind of a no Adam Sandler Hanukkah song.
He's a nice man, but he's just a very nice man. I'm tired of that song.
But that's like nails on a blackboard to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And we gave the Don McLean Dreidel song a listen, and we thought, you know, that's really just,
it's a great song, but it doesn't really reference Hanukkah.
No.
It's just a very cool song.
And it's a rockin' song, which I've forgotten how rockin' it was. Well, I will play some of my favorite songs later on tonight, since you got to sneak in a little Bob Rivers. Julian, you told me last week that this was my week. Because you played that. Mana, mana.
It's a wonderful song.
Remember?
It's an absolutely wonderful song.
Parting words last week, you said, it's your turn next week. You can, right? Right?
It could be worse. It could be this.
No! No! It's not me.
It really isn't. It's Diane Cannon. It really...
People will send texts and
the
say...
woman that... One of the women that Cary Grant was married to.
With the best hair in Hollywood. Oh, man. I always wanted that curly thing that she had going on. I was using my hands, for those of you watching us, to show you that curly thing she had going on. A listener said 613 also has... West Side Hanukkah and Hamilton Hanukkah.
Yep,
I'm not a fan of the Adam Sandler Hanukkah song either.
Yeah, so we'll be doing a bunch of 613 and some other fun Hanukkah songs too.
And they've got an event coming up in Skokie
in 2026.
Because I said, well, we'll track them down.
It's a private event. Because we looked on their schedule and we thought, oh, coming up in June. Then we said, wait a minute. We're talking a year and a half from now.
Tell us how we can get into that event if you know anyone. Give us the scoop on that. We'd love to be a fly on the wall.
Well, you can be a fly on the wall and see what else we're going to get into after we take a break. So stay with us at WGN. Officially Christmas.
That's true. So as a kid, I guess I was flaunting my blondness. For the longest time, I thought he was saying, run, run, Randolph. I remember it pointed out to me that Randolph was not one of the reindeer.
Nope. That, of course, Chuck Berry. And that song really taught Chuck Berry a lesson about publishing and copyrights and things like that.
Because he
wrote the song.
Mm-hmm.
When it came out, I'm trying to think of the guy, his last name was Marx, who had created Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, said, you're using a character that I created.
Oh, my.
Johnny Marks.
So if you look on the more recent records, CDs, whatever, it will credit Johnny Marks as being the writer because he won the copyright publishing
fight
against Chuck Berry.
What?
Because it was his character. Cut to after that.
Wait. How could that be?
Because he was using a copyrighted character.
Didn't Santa always have Rudolph?
Nope.
What?
Rudolph was, as a result of...
It was like a 1940s invention?
Yeah, and I believe it was Montgomery Ward.
In Chicago.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. I guess I knew that part of it, but I thought that popularized the reindeer that had been around forever. I don't.
But Chuck Berry learned from that. So years later, when the Beach Boys came out with Surfin' USA, he said, excuse me, that sweet little 16, so give me the money. He sued, he won.
And the Beatles. He sued the Beatles and won.
For Here Come All Flat Top, He Come Cruising Up With Me, Come Together, yeah.
Yeah, for Come Together.
Because that was very close to one of the lines from You Can't Catch Me.
And it was the same chords and same chord progression, but just in a different beat. But he he wound up winning that.
Wow.
And I've always been kind of loosey-goosey on that, because if you're gonna do that and say it's the same chord progression, same beat, well, then every blues song ever written should be credited to...
the first one that ever wrote.
Well, what's his face? Johnson.
Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson. Yeah. So...
You're coming in handy tonight, Ron. You should stick around.
I love the show. I'd love to stick around.
Well, you're welcome to stick around anytime, because if you listen on your way home, you probably hear, oftentimes it takes two of us to finish a sentence. One of us comes up with the idea, and the other one kind of looks and says, oh, my God, she doesn't know where she's going, so I better jump in. I do want to go back to the business of things being delivered. I want people to understand, I am not complaining about those hardworking folks that are out there in the rain,
they don't get paid nearly enough money.
No. We had a guy that was delivering the other night. He was wearing a miner's cap because he could not see when he got out of the truck.
Because the delivery was after 10 at night.
It was crazy. So I, again, not that I've received any angry texts from anybody. I just want to establish that I love those people who are bringing my packages to the house. I really do. And
it just becomes concerning when, in particular, there are a couple companies that we order food from. You don't want the boxes of food staying outside overnight in the rain, or with critters around.
The family of squirrels, I could just hear them right now. One of them stands up on his back legs and he whistles and says, hey,
they
boys,
got another delivery.
Come on. Come eat the bread. I know it's gluten-free. You're not going to like it, but come eat the bread. Let's tear into it.
But yeah, you are going to like it because...
Yes, but that's what they say to each other, because they don't understand gluten-free.
By the way,
I'm not drinking.
Can we give a shout-out to blatant plug, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Cooper's Hawk Restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
There was a really interesting article in the Daily Herald this week all about Cooper's Hawk Restaurants and how they are going above and beyond to serve the gluten-free community.
Yes.
And God bless them.
We knew that. We've had some very good experiences. We
recently went to the up in Wheeling. There's
in
a
Wheeling,
great Cooper's Hawk restaurant, and it was wonderful. The service was wonderful.
It took you 5 minutes to relax because the waiter was, don't worry about it, sir. We've got you taken care of. The manager came over to the table and wanted to be sure that you are happy with what you got. And there were choices.
Right away, within 5 minutes, as you say, I knew I was in good hands.
Yeah, yeah, and it's so many choices. And the article in the Daily Herald, you can Google Cooper's Hawk Daily Herald, and the article will come up. It was a terrific piece where they interviewed the chef and about how he said, for example, they made some slight changes like getting rid of soy sauce, which has wheat in it, and going with tamari sauce, which is a similar taste. And he says that allowed them to take 5 dishes that had gluten because of the soy sauce and make them gluten-free. Mm-hmm. Just that simple. And he said their fryers and things like that are closely watched so that there's no cross-contamination. So that's huge.
So we've good been, for Cooper's Hawk.
Yes, and we've been saying it for years. And in fact, for 20 years, we said we should find some way to invest in gluten-free because it's going to take off and it's going to be big. And sure enough, it is.
But also, for those of you who have been emailing and sending us messages, yes, Johnny will have another gluten-free holiday recipe a little later tonight.
Yes, yes, yes. We have the payday bars listed. And if you go to our blog, you can just on the right-hand side, you can write gluten-free. And a whole bunch of stuff comes up with pictures of potato candy. Come on. Who doesn't love a potato candy? Have you ever had a potato candy, Bob?
No.
Are you going to have it when I bring it in next week? It's made with mashed potatoes.
And what kind of sugar?
Actually, I can make it so that you could enjoy it. Yes.
I do have to be careful.
You do.
Especially with starches.
Yeah, that's true. With potatoes would be a problem. So maybe no, it's not for you.
Can I hold you on potatoes for a second, which is a sentence I never thought I'd say.
Hold me on a potato. Go right ahead.
The discovery made.
You know what? You're going to make me sound like I'm nuts.
Well, no, but it ain't bragging if you done it.
You notice I didn't say crazy because you would say
There are two separate questions here. But you made a discovery this week.
But Steve, and don't tell anyone.
Share the wealth, because this was one of those, it was kind of a,
okay,
what?
I've got a fancy, expensive potato masher.
Yeah.
From Williams Sonoma, right? And I make the potatoes and I think, these are kind of lumpy. But I'm putting a lot of elbow grease into it and I'm working on them. So the other day, I couldn't find it because I've been cleaning the kitchen. I couldn't find the potato masher. So I used a fork and I went, whoa, these are the whippiest, smoothest potatoes ever. A fork.
And it really made it. And I commented, not
you
knowing.
You did.
I commented.
Yes.
I said, wow, this is.
These potatoes are especially good tonight. And, yeah. Okay.
Now, intellectually, I still don't understand what happened. What's the difference between you got a potato masher, you're mashing the potatoes. You would think that that would take care of the drill. But when you
masher,
use the fork, they're closer together?
Yes, closer to the tines are closer together. The tomato masher, it's going to be a long night. Really? Didn't I say earlier I'm not drinking? Maybe that's the problem.
As Spike used to say, you don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial.
Somebody here must drink. We can amend this somehow. Start looking in the desk drawers, please. Isn't that where they keep it? Ron, you're chortling. You know stuff.
Well, of course I am. I'm listening.
So a potato masher has those big holes in the... I don't believe I'm even going here. I don't even believe... So I thought Rudolph was Randolph, and I finally learned that I could be like a pioneer woman and mash the potatoes. Next, I'll be mashing them with my hands, squeezing them.
By the way, Julian, red flag this. This is being submitted for broadcast excellence. Okay,
Hall of Fame quality right here.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. So listener says, even going gluten-free hasn't meant carbs can be eliminated. I love fork mashed taters. How about that?
Who knew fork mashed taters was a thing?
I'm going to Google it right now.
A bit lumpy.
That'd be a great group name.
Fork mashed taters?
But that'd have to do, Cajun swamp music or something, or what?
Yeah. It's like I mentioned coconut sugar, and you said, isn't that the name you danced under?
Yeah.
When I lived in Florida, not in the Midwest. Nobody would understand that.
Yeah, fork mashed potatoes comes up on a Google search.
Really?
Sure is.
Oh, golly.
It's a thing.
See, I could be offering classes. All right.
See, this has been a learning experience. Our work here is done.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to pack up. I'm getting out of here.
Our next guest really kind of fulfills a fantasy that a lot of us have probably had. She gets to play in Toyland all the time.
And she has for a long time. And she's just north of us in Milwaukee. Who knew that Santa's workshop was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin? She's Peggy Brown. Peggy, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Who knew?
Yes, who knew? I was so excited. I think I reached out to you. It was summertime when I reached out to you, and I said, are you really, really inventing toys and games? And you said, yeah, that's what I do for a living.
How did you...
Yeah, well, somebody's gotta work for Santa, right?
That's right.
But how did you stumble into this? I love this.
Well, I did stumble into this. I studied industrial design at the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, and I had a couple of choices of jobs when I graduated, and one was designing pots and pans, toasters and stuff, and one was designing parts for tractors at Case International Harvester down in Racine, and then the other job was in the game department at Western Publishing, which was in Racine, Wisconsin at the time. It was a 100-year-old company, and they had a really important game department. They did all kinds of games that you would have known throughout your whole life. And I was a staff designer there, and I worked on games like Pretty Pretty Princess and all kinds of things.
Do you find that when you say Pretty Pretty Princess, that we girls go, oh.
You know, I go like that because I can't believe it's still out. I think I worked on that in 1990, maybe, or 89.
Wow.
It's been a long time.
Was that one of your first the toys that you invented?
That one, I was a staff designer. So in those days, in that case, there was actually a Chicago company, an invention company that invented that. And it came in, it was licensed by the company I worked for, and I got to design all the parts and do all the play testing and work with the factories and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, that first couple of years at Western, that was one of the ones that I worked on there, probably the one that's been around, that's still around from those days.
Mm.
I drew the parts on a drafting machine. I used a pencil.
Wow.
Plastic parts to be molded. Yeah, it was just another universe away.
Yeah.
When did this go from, this is kind of a cool job, to, okay, this is going to be my profession, and now I've got the company and I'm doing this. How did that all happen?
So it was my job, and I worked on games, and I met a lot of people in the industry. I met all kinds of other inventors that would pitch their ideas into our company to be licensed and produced. And then I had a college roommate who was an illustrator, and the two of us said, hey, let's open our own company.
Wow.
We were like 22, I think. And I quit that job, and we opened a company called Alley-Oop. And we got this little burned-out studio up here on Wisconsin Avenue downtown in Milwaukee. And we started drawing game boards and doing artwork for all kinds of toy companies. We just cold called them and said, here's what we're doing. And we tried to get work from everybody, and we just built it up over time. It was a blast.
So what a story.
You cold called them. I love this.
People answered the phone.
Wow.
Well, okay, what did you say? If I'm the head of Joe's Toy Company and you call me, what do you first say to me?
Well, you know, you could say that you worked on this and that from, you know, that you've got this experience under your belt. And then we put our portfolio together and we went out to New York for Toy Fair, which took place every year in February since over 100 years ago. And we had no idea what we were doing, but we were going. And we went, and we just started making appointments with all these showrooms of all these toy companies. And I think after a while, they kind of figured out we weren't going away. Started working with us. And, I met some people that really pulled me along, and you know, it just kind of went from there. It was great.
That's great. So board games, you know how many board games you've been responsible for bringing to the market?
No, I don't know. So many people ask me that question, and I really don't know. And I don't even know if I could really count, because some games you work on and they get all the way to market, but some games you work on and they get almost there, and some, you know, die halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of different stages of development, and they're all kind of like little baby turtles trying to get to the ocean, and not all of them make it.
So, well, I have no idea. Do you have a version of all of the toys that you have invented, including those prototypes that may not have made it to the market?
I have some of them. When I worked for other companies, I don't have any of that stuff that would belong to those companies. But when I have, like, since I've had my companies, yeah, I have all of that stuff. I've got a basement completely full of all. I've saved one of every single thing that I've ever had produced. And it's funny because my mom says if my house burns down, it'll burn forever because it's full of games.
Oh my gosh! Now, when did you add plush animals to your resume?
It's probably been about 10 years now. I don't know. I just started Frankensteining plush. You know, you go to the store or whatever, and you get some stuffed animals, and you start ripping them apart, and you see what else you could do with them. You know, like,
wow,
okay, let's try this. And the first one I think that I had produced was called Lunch Pets, and it was a stuffed animal that, like, their little head, top of their head opened up, and inside their whole body was an insulated lunch bag, so you could take your lunch in your puppy or your crocodile or whatever it was. I forget. Oh, dinosaur, that's what it was.
Oh, my God.
Anyway,
gosh.
So I don't know. I really don't know how these things happen. Just you try things, and then you look at it, and you go, oh,
wow, I love that.
Do you ever dream any of these ideas? Like you wake up and you thought,
aha.
I don't know. I don't think so. No. You know what? I don't like to sleep.
You don't like to sleep. That's the creative mind that you have. It's probably busy all the time. That's all I can imagine.
Maybe. But yeah. I find that the best way to be creative is to let it go blank. You know, try to, like, not consume. So, you know, most people today, they're always being entertained. They're always there's no quiet.
Yeah.
Quiet. There's no fallow, right? There's no time where you can get bored and let your mind wander. And I find it really important to have it go back down to zero.
Oh, my gosh.
So I empty out my head.
That is brilliant. That's really something we should all take from this conversation, is we need to take some time just to go blank. And see what happens.
Yeah, go blank.
Yeah.
And get someplace where it's quiet and there's no input.
Mm-hmm.
When I want to relax, I don't consume media. I don't consume entertainment as much as I like to output. I like to just get rid of things out of my head and then sort of like let it wander.
If you were to let your mind go blank, but you had one plush toy that you would have sitting next to you on a log while your mind was going blank, what plush toy would that be?
I don't know. Well, at the moment, I have a Furblet sitting here on my desk. I just got some of these at an event, and it's pretty funny. It makes funny noises. He's like sings and...
Oh, that's fun. It's fun for the first 5 minutes. And then I'm sure it gets really annoying after a while.
Well, you know, Furby is a historical weirdo because he was actually banned from the Pentagon when he first came out. Because Furby can learn, he listens and he can learn language.
Oh my gosh.
He's going to start snoring in a second. But yeah, it's pretty interesting, some of the backstories on these things.
Wow. So, games... plush toys. You do puzzles too, right?
Yeah, I love making puzzles. The puzzles are more fun to make than they are to solve, I think.
I can appreciate that.
I sort of cut my teeth at a company that was the biggest jigsaw puzzle factory in the world at the time. And I was fascinated by the die-cutting machines, huge presses that would just stamp. It's like you take a thousand-piece puzzle, and it comes down, the press comes down with these knives like a cookie cutter, and it just ka-chonk. Takes tons and tons of pressure. I don't know, I thought it all really fascinating, and so I thought, oh, I could design some different kinds of jigsaw puzzles or whatever. But yeah, I work on all kinds of puzzles.
Oh, on the subject of puzzles, for example, if we picked one up, would your name be someplace on that puzzle, like Peggy Brown Creative? Would that be someplace on the box?
On some of them. Like, I have a line of puzzles called Puzzle Scopes that's from Mindware that I think my name is on it. I don't really pay that much attention of what my name gets on. But,
that's fascinating.
Yeah,
oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Peggy, you said something, and... I really am curious about this. You said how sometimes you have to just let your mind go blank, and I can appreciate that. But also, as you're coming up with ideas for toys, as I understand it, you literally sometimes are planning years into the future. So how do you balance that letting your mind go blank and yet anticipating what they're going to want in
26?
Well, that's a really hard question to answer because you never know what they're going to want. They'll tell you what they want, and by the time it's time to show them what you've created, they've changed their mind. So sometimes you have to sort of show them what they should want. And it's a little tricky. You know, it's not just thinking up, oh, this would be a really fun game or this would be a wonderful toy. It's, okay, what does this company do? What is their marketing plan? What are the holes in their line where you could see something fit? What's popular? What's trending right now? You know, what are the price points? So there's all kinds of things to really consider. It's a much bigger equation than everybody thinks. Everybody thinks I'm over here like flipping rubber bands around and trying to figure out it's not really like that. And it's a giant puzzle in itself. And, you know, you sort of come up with something good, and then you have to convince some millionaire someplace to put all kinds of money behind it.
Wow.
It's a tricky dance.
Yeah.
So it's a lot about relationship building and sort of getting the rhythm of how the year works and what companies do what and all of that.
So hypothetically, would a Parker Brothers come to you and say, okay, what are the holes in our lineup? What do we need? Tell us what we need to do.
Yeah, well, to some of the companies will publish. They'll sort of disseminate a wish list to some of us who are professional inventors, and they'll sort of give us a little bit of kind of some breadcrumbs to follow. And they'll tell us, okay, so maybe we're going to be doing a partnership with Disney this year, and we're going to need Frozen stuff. You know, everybody wants Frozen stuff. Or we're going to be looking at ride-ons this year. We're looking to, you know, expand our scooter line. Or nobody wants baby dolls this year. We want fashion dolls. So think about fashion, or think about little small doll, they call it, like little doll. Or, you know, whatever it is, they'll kind of put together some really general terms and a general list of the kinds of things that they're looking for. And then it gives you at least something to aim for. It helps a little bit, but that's a real moving target. And some of the companies that I work with don't publish that. They don't, you know, give you any of that info at all. They just always say, oh, show us the best thing you thought of. And it's like, okay, well, here it is. You just never know.
Well, if it is, let's take that best thing that you've got, and you've come up with the idea. Now, you have a hand in the production, the design, the manufacturing. At what point do they take over? Do you get to do everything all the way down to what the box is going to look like and what the rules of the game are going to be? Do you have a hand in that?
Yeah, and every project is different. Every product is different. Sometimes they just want you to name something. But sometimes you come up with the game, you write the rules, you sort of build up a prototype to show them exactly how it would work and how it would play. And sometimes then they'll license it from you at that point. But sometimes they'll hire me back to do artwork, to design plastic parts, to work with factories, and to bring in containers of finished goods from wherever we're manufacturing. It really just depends. And every project is different. I've got customers that... I have a customer in Europe that just has me write trivia for an app that they have called Quiz Planet.
Oh.
And they need local writers because somebody in France wouldn't be able to answer questions about baseball. So they have different people all over the world writing localized trivia for this app that they have. So I'll do any and all aspects of this kind of stuff.
Your life has really changed then over the years because as I understand it, you've been doing this for over three decades. So now with technology, here you are working, as you say, supplying trivia for an app.
Yeah, it's really different. I mean, when we were talking about Pretty Princess, I drew the parts for that game on a drafting board with a pencil. And everything since then has completely, you know, for everyone, the world has turned completely around. And so, yeah, you sort of have to keep current on everything, or else you're sort of left behind.
How, if at all, did the Barbie explosion impact your business?
You know what? I used to work on more Barbie stuff. I haven't been working much on Barbie stuff in a lot of years. Earlier on, I worked on some of the games. I did Queen of the Prom and... Oh, I can see it. What was that other one? Dream Date. Barbie Dream Date. Oh. And I think I worked on a couple others. And we used to do Barbie puzzles and other stuff. But in recent years, I haven't really done much with Barbie, so it hasn't really affected me all that much, although it's been really fun to watch. It's been fun to watch it percolate, you know, and sort of give rise to other things that are new and more current in regard to Barbie.
So you've won three Taggies, which are like Oscars in the world of games and toys, is that right?
Yes, that's right. And I think I've had maybe seven or eight nominations. I can't even remember.
Wow.
But yeah, it's a real honor. It's because it's an award that's given by the industry. So it's, you know, it's your peers.
Sure.
People really know.
Sure. I guess, forgive me, but I'm kind of blown away by the fact that there's so much of this that's being done in this country. that we have enough talent that's able to do this and make our games here and come up with ideas for our plush. And
yeah, a lot of that is done. I mean, I work with companies all over the world, and there are inventors all over the world, and we generally see each other at the different conventions. There's a big one in Chicago in November. It's called People of Play, and then Toy Fair is usually, we go to London in the end of January, and then Nuremberg is a really big one, and then to New York after that. We all kind of know each other, and we all work for the same companies. It's real funny because we're competitors, but we're also friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always like old home week when there's one of these conventions going on because we see each other. We're out in L.A. in September, and it's pretty fun, but then you kind of keep track of what everybody's up to, you know,
mm-hmm.
who's making what and what's percolating.
That's really cool. Peggy, can we ask you to sit tight while we take a quick break for news and come back and just, we want to pick your brains for a few more minutes. We're talking with Peggy Brown. She's a Peggy Brown creative, and she has created so many games and toys. Oh, my goodness. Stay with us, and we'll get back with her in just a moment here on WGN.
Smiling girls and rosy boys, come and buy my little toys. Monkeys made of gingerbread and sugar horses painted red. Rich men's children running past their fathers dressed in hose. Golden hair and mud of many acres on their shoes. Gazing eyes and running wild past the stocks and over stiles. Kiss the window, merry child, but come and buy my toys.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with Peggy Brown from Peggy Brown Creative about her toys, her games. And I have to ask you a partly personal, because plushes come into the conversation. And I have to ask you,
okay.
Because I love puppets. Do you make any puppets?
let me think. I did a finger puppet theater years ago. I don't know. There's no puppets in the works right now.
Get on that right now, Peggy.
Okay.
And Peggy,
just gonna,
and we want to bring in our
at the bottom of any stuffed animal.
We want to bring in our producer, Julian. Julia, you had a real interesting call, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did. Had somebody call in wondering, Peggy, if you have or would consider doing toys for blind children, something with tactile textures, things where they can feel what they're holding and enjoy them without seeing it.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I think there are a lot of toys already that are like that. I suppose that's something I could look into. You know, it's always important to sort of talk to who the toy is for and think mm-hmm. about the end user. So I'd have to sort of put my head into that and talk to some people and see what it is, you know, what kinds of things they would find interesting or useful or playful or, right. But yeah, I mean, anything's possible. We can build a space shuttle if you want.
Well, you could. I have no doubt. In fact, speaking of children, it'd probably be best for me to ask your mom this, but when you think back to you as a little person, were you unusually creative? I mean, did the family say, oh, that's Peggy, she's weird, she's drawing, she's doing all these fun things? How were you as a kid?
I was a makey kid. I had to make everything. I had to draw everything. I try. You know what else? I try things. As somebody once said that every act of creation is first an act of destruction. And it's kind of true. You know, people are afraid to make that first mark on a canvas or to, you know, to destroy something in order to make something else. And that's really part of it. You have to have a little bit of gut. And I think I started with that early, and I got really used to going, hey, let's try this. Let's put two things together and see, you know, see what happens.
Wow.
And, you know, we didn't have much. So Santa used to bring me, you know, fuzz balls and felt and pipe cleaners and googly eyes and crayons and stuff like that. And, you know, I just made things out of whatever I had. Right. It's funny. When I gave one of my
speeches when I accepted my first Taggy Award, I thanked my mom for letting me use the good scissors.
Oh.
Because, you know, like when you're a kid, you don't really have access to that much. And
yes.
And I just was able to make things out of whatever was around, you know?
Yes. Oh.
Yeah, it was like that.
And that was a perfect thing to thank her for, because immediately I flash on those awful scissors you get in school when you're a kid with the blunt edges on them. And, you know, if your fingers are a little bigger, you can't really get them comfortably on. Yeah, that was a good mom move on her part.
Yeah, she was great. She's a school teacher, so she made sure I had everything I needed.
Yes, yes. Well, now
you're from Chicago.
Is she really? Okay.
Yeah, South Shore. Yeah.
Now
South Shore. I grew up on the South Side.
79th and Paxton.
Oh,
you're kidding! I grew up at 80th and Manistee.
Okay.
Neighbors.
Tell her.
We'll
love to hear that.
Wow. Now, I want you to tell us what you're working on at this point. Are you working on 2025, or are you farther down the road?
We're beyond. 2025 is over.
Really?
We're on, yes, for sure. Well, okay, so think about it. Christmas, I mean, the toy department, if you go to Target or someplace, the toy department expanded 2 months ago.
Yeah.
So all the stuff for this year was done way earlier. The stuff for next year is now being produced. It's in factories, different places. It's all, like, getting figured out and engineered. And
wow.
And then come summertime, it'll be on the water in those big container ships. And, you know, a lot of it, the stuff that's made offshore. And then it hits the stores, and you watch the toy department expand back again after they take out all the Halloween stuff or whatever. And then, so we are on 2026. And because I work on so far onto the front end of the business, much of 2026, like of the different slots that companies are looking for different things, those are starting to fill up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right now is like prime time to get those ideas licensed and get them into those companies, because they're filling up their 26 lines now.
Wow. Wow, I don't even know what I'm going to do tomorrow. We're talking about toys for 26.
Well, it's funny because people are like, well, what's coming out? What do you have coming out? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't remember, because I worked on that stuff 2 years ago, and I really, seriously, I'm not even thinking about that anymore. It's gone.
Wow.
And then you just have to wait, you know, like, is it going to be a Merry Christmas? I don't know. Ask me in March.
as you're doing some of your planning and research, do you talk to kids?
Yeah, sometimes. But it's funny, the kids are sort of like the last people on the food chain.
Really?
And I know that sounds bonkers. I mean, the kids, what I create for the kids, like, lives in my heart. But it's such a gauntlet. I have to get it through so many other different stages first. And the kids are really like the last people they're the end consumers. So I will pitch it to probably a marketing person who will take it in and run it up the flagpole inside a company, and all the different salespeople and all the different departments of engineering, everybody will look at it and decide, should we make it, should we not, can we get it for the price point we need it at, you know, how will we promote it, blah, blah. And then they're like, okay, sure, we'll do it. So then there's got to be a deal made, and then once that happens, then they start talking to their factory people and their designers, and, you know, it kind of has to go through a lot of different stages, and it's, you know, somebody has to be convinced it's worth it every single step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the kid, yeah, I'm always trying to think about the kid, but I always have to concentrate on all these things, other things first.
The hurdles.
Well, with all of these, with all of these business hoops that you have to jump through, is there any one thing that stands out as having been a personal project that you were really, really pleased when you finally got this one over the humps?
You know, it's funny. They all have a different story, and they all have sort of a different path. None of them are really even comparable with each other. But every once in a while, one gets made that I really like. I mean, I have some out there that I don't even like to claim, because it's just like it's just a job. I mean, I remember working on, I'm admitting this on the radio, but I can't believe I'm saying it. I worked on the Jeff Foxworthy You Might Be a Redneck game, and I wrote two more punchlines for every one of his jokes in order to fill up the game with all these, you know,
right,
being able to play it. But I just hated that. I'm sure it's still selling someplace, but I'm like, oh, this is terrible. But, you know, you just sometimes it's just a job. But
oh,
I do
goodness.
Have a couple. I have one that I just love. It's called Count Your Chickens, and it teaches
yes.
kids to count without numbers. There's no numbers in it.
Right, right. You're counting chickens.
Yeah, and that's been out for like 15 years. I really mm-hmm. like that one. Some of them are really just sweet. Some of them are funny. I don't know. I don't really, I don't know if there's one in particular that I could say is
well,
special. And
I kind of
you know,
think, too, Peggy, it's a little like choosing your favorite child. It's like, well, it's kind of hard to do that. So, well, I just love the...
and you know, you can like them for different reasons. You know,
sure.
You really like the one that pays the mortgage, and, you know, regardless of what that is.
That's the bottom
know?
Line. Yes. Yes. I love the way your mind works. And I know you know, you're like, well, why? This is just me. But it just blows me away to think that this is what you do for a living and you do it so well.
Well, since Peggy, since you are planning, always planning for the future.
Yes.
I would like to now ask if we can book you for next November when you're in Chicago. Can
yes.
we con you into coming in the studio and hanging out with us for a little while?
Well, that would be really fun. Yeah, I'm always in Chicago in November.
Well, you do that. We'll play games. We'll make it. We'll make it a twofer. Okay.
That sounds fantastic.
My problem was, as an only child, I'd never had anyone but my mother to play games with, and my mother was of the mind that I had to learn that you're not always going to win, so I never won
right.
because she was the mom.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, you know, I love... we could go on forever, but there's some of your games that I think, yes, I would have loved those. I could have played those by myself.
Yes, there are some you can play by yourself. That's right. And so, you know, and that's cool. And then there's some of them you can put two games that you can both play by yourself and you can play them together.
Yes, yes. Well, Peggy, it's been such a
this
kick.
Has been fun,
yeah,
Peggy.
I love meeting you, and I hope you have a very Merry Christmas, and I hope you continue. I want you to just keep being creative, and yeah, we'll see you here in this studio. We're going to hold you to this in November, okay?
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much. I had a good time.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, Peggy.
Merry Christmas.
She is fun.
Oh, my gosh. The way her mind works, I'm just like, well, there are those that pay the mortgage, and then there are those. And
I loved her redneck confession.
Yes, we have that game.
We do.
I might be a redneck, yes. And I think we put it away because we thought, as a Southerner, I was like, I'm not crazy about this. So I love her honesty. Peggy Brown Creative, you can check her out online. You can see even some shots of her basement where she has one of all of the things that she's invented.
And if you're a fan of Rachel Ray, she's been on Rachel Ray's show so many times.
We'll take a break. We'll come right back here with our, how about shout outs?
Okay.
We've got 16 states tuned in tonight right here on WGN.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. I love my chicken, baby. Shouting, mama, mama. Well, 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 nobody's gonna say them down.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam at WGN Radio. Shout, mama, mama. And it's time for some shout-outs.
Yep, we got a whole bunch of people tuned in tonight, like Sherry in Morris, also Jim G in Wisconsin, Bill is in Hobart, and a listener in a 224 area code said, my cat wakes me up every Saturday night when she hears the Steve and Johnny song. I love that cat.
Yes.
We need more cats like that. Also, Bonnie in Butternut is tuned in. Laura and her dog named Cotton in Willowbrook. A few people were commenting on our conversation about deliveries. I'm laughing because some of these people go, I know, I almost fell for that same scam when you get a text saying that your package mm-hmm. isn't going to... And you know what? we repeat this because you need to be reminded that there are people out there, bad people, that are really, really smart. Criminals are not dumb. I realized that when we got into the whole tech environment, because they were doing things that I could not even comprehend. Yeah. And so when you're getting these texts, we remind you, you know, be very, very careful and do not click on things.
And be careful of some of the things we were talking about, some of the ads that were coming up on Facebook.
Yes.
And so many of them, they have a picture of what looks like a really great jacket or a really great shirt or something. And it says made in USA.
U period S.
Yeah, like, but look at some of the language, and I'm just very suspect of a lot of these things.
And you can just take the name of that company and Google reviews, and you will be blown away by how many of those companies have been rated, no, 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 don't go there. This is not a good idea.
And it's always a good idea, even if you're going to order from whatever the company is, do not click on that link. Open up a separate browser window, put in the website, see if it works for you, see if it's legitimate.
Absolutely. Stacy in Algonquin is tuned in tonight. Also, Wendy Cozio is in Bartlett. Sylvia Rapids is, she started it with us at the top of the show tonight. Patrice Tentari is in Highland, Indiana. A lot of you have commented on my pictures of the Drake Hotel as we were driving in tonight, because that beacon was just cutting right through.
Great pictures.
The misty rain.
And again, go to facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and you can see all the pictures that Johnny's put up.
Suzette Frederick is listening in South Cook County. Carol Tyler Roberts in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Janet Parker listened in tonight. Brian Lefevre. I think Brian might be one of our guys who's actually listening in Chicago. Thank goodness. There are a few of you out there. Valerie Barr is tuned in. Susan Altman is in Naperville. Patricia Koch. Oh, she pronounces it Cook. It's K-O-C-H, and she's pronounced it Cook. She's in Hobart, Indiana, along with our buddy Chuck Snitchler. He's in Hobart, Indiana, best friend of this radio station. Speaking of buddies, Bobby Danos out in the Manor in Sandwich is tuned in. Penny Schick is in Tavares, Florida. Roy Phillips is in Milwaukee. Bill Voinovich is listening. I know that name, Bill Voinovich.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's a regular listener. Thank you, Bill. Celine Ellers is in Chicago. Colleen Freund, Donna Marie. She says, I agree. Getting mail is crazy these days. John Kane, Ralph Doey, Jim Smith, hanging out at home, listening to us on the radio. Bonnie Pearson, Linda Obremski, Linda from Plano. That's Linda with a Y. Carrie Carlson, Nancy Hollins is in Northbrook. Bev Campbell and Carol Summers. Carol's our friend from South Florida, right?
Hey, Carol.
Yeah. Real quick, Ellen Maria's Wisconsin Dells. Beverly Goodall is listening on her digital clock radio in Highwood, Illinois.
I love the picture that Eric Baum sent.
Did we get an Eric
from
picture?
From Wells Beach, Maine. It's a really, really nice picture.
Last week he sent us the lobster tree that I posted, and a couple hundred people went nuts over that.
Scroll down. This was on the Facebook page where we listed what we're doing tonight.
Yes.
And he has a great picture of from an evening stroll in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Oh, I'll get there in just a moment. Beverly Goodall's in Highwood. Carrie Johnson, Palm Coast, Florida. Barb Wienes is in Muskegon, Michigan. Forgive me, Barb. I know I just botched your name. Jan Richardson and her cats Muffin and Coco. Oh, along with Jenny the dog. She's babysitting. We had a muffin. We loved our muffin. He was 20-plus years old.
Yep.
Yeah. Peter Jacobowitz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Robin Aiken in Port Charlotte, Florida. Patricia Heumann is in Scranton, PA. Roger Camp in South Carolina. Margaret Durkin Reynolds is listening on her good old-fashioned AM radio from Palos Heights. Tracy Douglas in Savannah, Georgia. Susie Schimmel in Glen Ellen. Michelle Reitman is listening also on her analog clock radio. Terry Knight is in Batavia. Larry Mann is in Miami. Delphine Bierman's listening on her transistor. Justin McElwee is tuned in. Jim Smith and Sherry Malone in K-Town, and Lynn Kinzer in San Antonio, Florida. We had a listener who was loving her flannel sheets. She was cuddled up in her flannel sheets tonight listening. Yeah. There's Donna Youngheim and Jan Reinhart and Helen Thomas and Diane Vasquez. And thank you all for tuning in. And if I missed you this week, I'll catch you next week.
And back to Muffin the Cat. Muffin was the reason that I married Johnny.
That's true.
Because, and we've told the story, but I will reiterate it. I was living in an apartment building on Sheridan Road. I lived on the 8th floor. There was a woman on the 1st floor who apparently was not the cleanest person on the planet, and apparently they discovered that there may be some roaches in her apartment.
So many roaches, Steve, when you open the cabinet doors, they tumbled out of the cabinets.
On the 1st floor.
Yes.
And they were going to fumigate the whole building.
Mm-hmm.
So I had Muffin, who had been with me for years, longer than I'd known Johnny. And I went to Johnny and I said, they're going to be fumigating the building and I'm not going to be able to be there all the time. I don't want Muff to have to deal with this. So would you mind taking him for a few days?
And I said, no, I don't like cats. I'm a dog person. And you said, I'm worried about leaving the cat in the building when this is happening. And I said, okay.
So I took Muff over. And he was only supposed to stay with Johnny for a couple days. And then after those couple days, and they had fumigated the building, and I went over to get Muff and knocked on the door, and there was a chain on the door.
I had the chain on the door, and I opened the door, and I said, what do you want? We really were not seriously dating at this point. Yeah. We were friends. We were coworkers. I said, what do you want? And you said, I came to get my cat. And I said, uh-uh. Your cat loves me. And you said, I want my cat back. I've had my cat for like 12 or 15 years at that point. And I said, sorry, this cat's staying here. This cat sleeps with me. You don't let the cat sleep with you. He told me. And you said, oh, come on. So next thing you know, we're dating and then we got married so you can give your cat back.
Exactly.
And it worked. And I love that cat. I became a cat person after that.
And Muff lived to be 21 years old.
Yep. When Muff left us, you like to say, I had that cat longer than you.
Yeah.
A lot longer than you at that point. Yes. And then we had a little Cocker Spaniel at the same time we had her. So it was wonderful.
Yeah, that was my dad's Cocker Spaniel, Cinnamon, who came to live with us. And initially, Cinnamon and Muff did not get along until WGN radio engineer Aubrey Mumpower said, when you go home, pet the cat with one hand, pet the dog with the other one, then switch hands, and you're mixing their scent. We did that, and within one day, they became each other's best friends. It's like they realized, oh, that scent means you're part of my pack.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to love me, too. Okay. Yeah. I'm good with that.
We're going to talk Christmas and holiday photography with Will Byington coming up. So stay with us at WGN Radio.
I'm brighter than I have. Where the lamps are cheaper and clients listen to hear. Can I pay you more?
Well, yes, please.
I'm dreaming of new cameras with endless space on my hard drives. May your files be bright enough, and may all your images be sharp.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that. I have no idea who that is. Well, I'll tell you who it is, but we just stumbled on this. This is Alessandro
Carpentiero.
And it's the photography Christmas song. And it only seemed appropriate to use that to introduce Will Byington. Hey, Will.
That was absolutely fantastic.
Because that's all you want for Christmas, right?
That's pretty much my theme song, I think.
Yeah.
I need to hear that. I need to play that. Oh. Julian was showing me. He has a brand new lens.
Yes.
And I was kind of drooling over it. And
He actually said, "Sir, please step away. step away from the new lens." Because like that, yeah, every photographer, everyone who even dabbles in photography, dream, like, there's never an end.
What's like guitars?
No. Yep.
You know, he has gas.
The classic question is, okay, how many more guitars do you need? Just one more.
Enough. There's never enough.
Yeah. Well, the answer is always just one more.
Yeah.
Well, do they have a phrase like for guitar lovers and players? It's gas, guitar acquisition syndrome. Is there something for photographers like that? We got to come up with a name.
No comment. There's definitely, you know, the crazy thing, and we've talked about it, and the beauty of what we're going to talk about is the camera phones and how good they've gotten. And I will honestly say it has changed my syndrome of wanting gear, but that's also a total lie because I do always want gear.
Yeah.
You know, you never have enough lenses, never have enough new cameras. And then the problem also, we do live in a world where you compare yourself to everybody. Of course, everybody does. And there's a photographer, for example, a guy named Manny Ortiz, who's a phenomenal photographer, and he has the new Sony camera, and it's about a $7,000.
Manny's local, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a Chicago
photographer. Sure he is.
Well, on his Instagram, Manny Ortiz, he just went to Africa and did a safari with the new Sony camera. And he had the new Sony A1-2, I think it is. And he had a 600mm lens.
Oh.
So he's walking into the safari with, I mean, that's probably $15,000 worth of gear, if not more.
Wow.
With the lenses he had. But literally, and I've shown like five people his photos from the safari. If you want to see some of the best photos I've ever seen of safaris, of elephants and lions and tigers and everything, leopards, they're absolutely incredible. And they're so sharp and just so good.
Yeah.
And so again, like I sit there and go, I'm loving taking pictures with my phone. And then I see that, and I'm like, but I would like that Sony A1-2.
Yeah, Santa, so if you're listening.
Christmas is coming up, Santa. WillByington.com. On Venmo, you can find me.
It's
amazing.
And let me hit the pause button for a second for anybody new to our conversations with Will Byington. Yes, go to WillByington.com, and you should check out Will Byington Photography. And you have some things coming up over the next couple of days that the blatant plug light is flashing for.
Yeah. So, you know, what's fun and why I love joining y'all is, as much as gear, and we all dream of gear and everybody wants that, I get so many people who come up to me and talk about being a photographer. And the number one thing is the best camera is the one you have with you. And in this day and age, the best camera we all have with us, and we've compared our cameras here, are our phones. And the phones have gotten so amazing and so good at taking photos now. And one thing I've started doing over the last couple of years that we've talked about is I do a shotclubphotoclass.com. So the website is shotclubphotoclass.com. I'm doing a virtual class on Monday night on Zoom. And you can book it and check it out at shotclubphotoclass.com. I'll be doing a couple in January as well. And the fun thing is, what I do with the class is we get rid of all the gear envy. Because the whole class is based on your phone. Whether your iPhone or Android or Samsung, everything's just about the camera that you have with you at all times. And the beauty is you can have that Sony A1-2, which would be very nice. WillByington.com. I'll make a donation. But you can have that. But carrying that around is so much work. And half the time you don't have it with you.
Yep.
You always have your phone with you. And in this time of the holidays, for example, when you're with friends, when you're with family, the iPhone in your pocket is just as good as that camera because it's what you have with you. And the cool thing is, with night mode, for example, on the iPhone, and night portrait, there's night settings on the Androids, the cool thing is you can get really amazing shots of Christmas lights, Christmas trees, candles. You can do some really unique, cool photos. And just by changing the exposure, on the iPhone, if you tap to focus and then you bring that little sun down to change the exposure, you can get amazing shots of kids with candles, for example, or Christmas lights.
Well, and we just recently learned, Johnny figured this out, and then I've tried it on my Android phone, our Samsung phones. the same thing. You just tap on it, and this little circle comes up, and you just kind of
slide
control the light.
Yeah.
And boy, does it make a huge difference.
And it's amazing how many people don't realize that because mm-hmm. they take it on full auto. And mm-hmm. and what I like about it is I challenge people, and I challenge everybody listening, play with that. Play with the exposure.
Can I hold you on that for a second? Full auto. For the past several months, since Johnny got her new phone, she's had a problem taking pictures as we'd be driving into the station. Just a couple weeks ago, she figured out, take her phone off auto,
yeah.
and it makes all the difference
everything
in the
was
world.
Blurry, and I kept saying, back with my old LG flip phone, I got better pictures than this. When I took it off auto, then it changed.
And what I do tell people, though, a lot of times, whether it's with a Sony or Nikon, Canon, whether it's a real camera or your phone, what I do say, sometimes start with the auto.
Mm-hmm.
So take
yes.
the picture with the auto.
Just to see what it
and
does.
You can see how it looks, see how it, mm-hmm. it dials it in. Because, again, smartphones, in a lot of ways, are just as smart as we are,
mm-hmm.
or smarter.
Smarter.
But what I tell people is, sorry to interrupt, what I tell people is start there and then change it to the manual mode. Change it to mm-hmm. the portrait mode or on the iPhone. Like I said, just even tap to hold, it'll focus, and it'll do what's called AEAF lock, auto exposure, auto mm-hmm. focus lock. It'll lock it if you hold and hold it, and then you drag that sun down, for example, on the iPhone, it's a sun, and what that'll do is that'll make it more dramatic. And mm-hmm. so you start with the auto, but then you get into the professional modes and play with it, and you can really dial in mm-hmm. amazing photos.
And wouldn't it be a good idea, going back to Johnny's, and I'm driving and she's taking pictures, if you're going to fool with that, take the same route. Take the same block or something and do it on auto, then take it off auto, same thing, and see the so you're comparing mm-hmm. apples to apples in how you're modifying
it. And it's just
this.
Fun. But the number one thing I teach with my shotclubphotoclass.com is the number one thing I teach is when you're – just play with it. And the number one thing I've learned is people – they think they're going to break it. They sometimes treat their phones as if they're fragile, you know mm-hmm. – glassware at Christmas. Play with your phone. Play with the settings. You know, at the holidays, play with time lapse. You know, as you're driving down Lakeshore Drive or Michigan Avenue.
Yes.
Michigan Avenue is beautiful to see.
Oh, I love hyperlapsing.
And so drive and do that time lapse. And you literally just hold it. And as you drive, it'll create a really cool short video that's great for stories. It's great for Instagram Reels. And what's cool is that time lapse. Let's say your drive is 10 minutes down the road or a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
However long you do it, it'll all of a sudden create a 20-second video, 30-second video from a 10-minute ride.
Yes.
And so it's easy to share, and it's really cool.
Yes.
And people don't play with that as much.
In fact, we have to do that 3 o'clock in the morning down Michigan Avenue.
Yes.
Because that's going to be really cool because there's so few cars out at that hour.
Also Michigan Avenue, but also something that we discovered a couple months ago. We were driving home, 3 in the morning.
Yes.
Devon on the north side of the city, going down from... roughly from Western to roughly McCormick, and there is a wonderful area there. It is
it's the Indian community,
and they have these like light poles that have lights all over
different
the way
colored
they're
lights.
Decorated.
This was not Christmas. This was a couple of months ago. Every light pole is like purple and turquoise and. It was gorgeous.
We have to do the time lapse drive down there
because
it's just magnificent.
You know what's also fun is so on an iPhone, and there's settings you can do on the Androids and Samsungs, mm-hmm. but on iPhone, I tell everybody to leave their live photo on. And live photo, what that does is it creates a little, it's motion video on Android. On the iPhone, it creates a video clip. Now, one thing, this is one of those magic things that I have no clue how it works, because it starts filming before you hit the shutter button.
Hmm?
It literally starts filming a second or two, but it creates a little video clip. And what's really cool about this is, for example, also on Michigan Avenue, let's say, or if you're at the Christmas tree down at, in Grant Park,
mm-hmm.
Millennium Park, what you can do is with that live photo on, you'll create this little video clip. and then you can actually instantly make it a long exposure. And what's cool for that is, same thing, if you were thinking down Michigan Avenue and you got to be stopped, you got to keep that camera, that phone, really still. You got to keep it as still as could be to make it work. And what I recommend there is mount it on something. Lean it up against something or set it on the, you know, rest it on the bar, you know, the railing or wherever you can in front of you. And your car rested on the dashboard. But what's cool is with the live photo and the iPhone, you take the picture of Michigan Avenue, and then all of a sudden the car lights will be blurred.
Yes.
And now at 3 a.m., there probably aren't too many cars that you need to blur out because the road will be empty. But it's kind of cool. Like if you were out there right now, you could all of a sudden blur the car lights and all the Christmas lights will be in focus.
Yeah.
And it really is a cool thing to do if you do the long exposure when there's tons of people moving. So like Chris Kindlemark.
So you get a sense of movement then?
Yeah, a sense of movement.
Oh, neat.
And you get the cool thing with the lights. And it's you know, you used to have a tripod and a very expensive lens to get that kind of effect. And now it's built right into our cameras.
One of the pieces of advice that that I usually give to people trying to take a holiday group picture is hold your hand up high, because you're going to eliminate the double chins.
Yeah. Always go high.
Always go high. So that people look up a little bit, and it makes them look more attractive.
Thing. I laugh. You know, I've done a couple things with some influencers, and you know, the kid. I'm 46, so I laugh when I say kids these days.
Yeah.
But there is a trend where they like shooting up at people, you know, where they go really low. And every now and then that's cool. But I really do say for selfies, if you're taking a selfie, if you're taking a group shot, if you are almost any group shot of people, go a little higher. Raise it above your head and shoot down on them. Because it does. It does. If you look up, you get a little bit of thing. Now, I will say one idea I wanted to share also that I've learned. A buddy of mine, my buddy Sean Hughes, went to the Taj Mahal recently. And there was a really cool photo where somebody, had, the tour guide or whatever, had a bottle of water. And what the guy did was literally poured the water on the pavement. And then all of a sudden took a picture of Sean and everything and the Taj Mahal in the water reflection.
Oh, boy.
And so one thing I was going to say, that's another idea for a really kind of cool holiday photo.
Yeah.
If you're downtown, if you're at the Great Christmas Tree or even the Christmas Tree over at Wrigley Building.
Yeah.
Just spill a little water, make a little puddle, and then get a reflection of the tree. Because it's really cool to see. Everybody likes reflections. So it's kind of cool to see a reflection of the Christmas lights in the water. And it's something simple where you can create your own puddle. You can create your own reflection. I've also seen people do it where they use someone else's phone. And so they have
their phone. Reflection.
So you have your phone and then you have, so you have to have two phones.
Right.
But do a reflection off the shiny part of a phone.
Ooh, I like
it's
that
kind
too.
It's kind of a cool way to make a cool Christmas lights, because you really want to accentuate the lights.
So speaking of accentuating the lights, with all of the holiday lights, what's your best tip for cell phone users so they don't get a bunch of blurry lights? And because the opportunity for great pictures is there, but boy, it's difficult sometimes with all the lights.
And we've talked about it in previous shows here. It is tough. You know, a lot of people always say, Will, how do you take a great picture of the moon? How do you get a great picture of some of this? And there are sunsets. Sunsets sometimes are amazing. Sometimes a phone. There is a reason people still buy cameras. There is a reason people still go buy gear and big lenses and big gear. Sometimes, you know, the phones are amazing right now, but they're not always totally there. One of the most simple things I'll also say to answer your question, how do you get – I'm shocked how often people's lenses are dirty. And so one of the simple things I tell everybody is if you see a smudge, if you see a blurred light, one is sometimes it does come down to keeping it still. So again, use that water bottle, use whatever you can to set your phone on it. And if you're doing night mode and some of those, the stiller you keep it, the better it's going to be. But I'm shocked how often I need to just tell people
or clean
someone
your
will
lens.
Hand me a phone. And again, we have these on us at all times. Mm-hmm. That's why it is the best camera.
And your fingertips are going to touch it
your
and smudge it up.
Your pocket, you've got mm-hmm. stuff. I'm shocked how many times people will hand me their phone and I just go, hold on a second. And I'll wipe it, even with my shirt. You know, and you're not going to mess it up. Again, mm-hmm. it's not fine crystal. Mm-hmm. You know, wipe off the smudges on your lenses and you'll get better shots of lights.
And I also find that, again, back to the tapping the screen, when you're aiming at lights, you'll be surprised at sometimes how things come into focus quickly. It gets darker. You can slide it and get it darker. And when you get it darker, the tree may almost look black, but then the lights are really popping at you.
And that's where, again, just play with it, because you might do different levels of it. You know, you might.
Yes.
Because some people do. It is cool to make it really bright and mm-hmm. vibrant. But also, again, sometimes just changing that exposure and just playing with it. And cleaning the lens, and really just different angles is the other thing I'll say. Because mm-hmm. real quick, you asked about the lights and the streaks.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and that's one thing people say always. They're like, oh, I like this photo, but the lights are streaking. Mm-hmm. Usually that's because your lens is dirty. But the bigger thing I do say is change your perspective, change your look, change your angle. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes if you're holding the phone at, say, your eye level, there's going to be a streak. And it's all about, we're dealing with these lenses. They're so small, relatively so mm-hmm. small, that sometimes all you have to do is go a little higher, go a little
That's
lower,
true.
Go to the side. And I'm amazed how many people don't do that. They don't take mm-hmm. the extra 30 seconds. They don't take the extra 5 seconds mm-hmm. to go a little higher, to just change the angle a little bit. And sometimes it'll make all the difference with light streaks and things like that.
We're going to take a break for news. We're talking with Will Byington. Will has been kind enough to join us a couple times this year. Right now, we're talking about taking some flattering holiday pictures, some good holiday pictures. We're going to sneak in a couple of your questions at 312-981-7200. Some folks are texting in about their iPhones and their Android phones. And we have a full moon tonight. This is the 15th. It's the big cold Christmas moon. So we'll talk a little bit more about getting moon pictures with Will. He's got classes coming up with details on that as well here on WGN.
It's December in Australia, time to remember all the family. Christmas tree, native pine, lights and tinsel all entwined. Put a fairy on the top, there's Gran and Pa and Joan and Pop. The ham and turkey's organised, won't the grandkids be surprised when Santa comes in big black boots in the back of Jacko's ute.
Oh, 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 oh.
It's December in Australia, time to remember all the family. Gather round for a photo. Hang on, Dad, where did Sam go? We've got to get everyone in the picture. Oh, here he is. Come on, Sam. Now say cheese.
Cheese.
Wait a minute, Bubbles is missing. Oh, yum, yum, pig's bum, Christmas pudding. All the ladies do the cooking.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
How do Australians say photos? Photos?
It's just...
That's cute.
But that is that was one of our photo finds. That's John Williamson. It's called Christmas Photo. He is an Australian. And but that really sort of encapsulizes the problem with, okay, you're going to do the photo. Now get everybody together and then say cheese or what... What is your go-to problem solver for, here's everybody in the family, get them together and get the photo, and hopefully everybody smiles at the same time?
You know, it's funny. I did a photo shoot for a friend today and his family. And, you know, I hate to say there were a couple kids in the photo, but it is the old-fashioned, I pull out the keys, dangle some keys.
Really?
And sometimes... It's dangling the keys for the adults as much as...
To get them to look. Yeah.
You know, the other key that I do, and we kind of talked off air about editing, because I do believe you can edit. Unless mm-hmm. you're shooting for the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, or Sports Illustrated, Rolling Stone, edit. And one thing I'll do is, a lot of it is, I will tell the families, I'll tell the parents, just keep looking at me. Mm-hmm. And I just shoot a bunch. Mm-hmm. And the number one of the things I teach in my class is, after you realize the best camera is the phone you have with you, then it's also shoot away. And I say shoot away from the standpoint of change your angles, change your perspectives, go low, go high, go wide, go close.
Mm-hmm.
But I also say when you're taking a picture, if it's somebody handing you a photo and saying, hey, take a picture of our family in front of the tree,
mm-hmm.
or you're actually there really doing it, I always laugh when people take one, two,
yeah.
maybe three photos and hand it back. I always say shoot away. And the beauty of it is because it doesn't cost anything. It's totally, you're not having to go get that
right, yeah.
36 roll of exposure
right.
film developed. The beauty of it is, if you shoot away, the cool thing you can do is, whether it's using that live photo trick, you can actually open eyes
mm-hmm.
by using that live photo because it creates that little video clip. But also, like now with photo editing, you can easily edit someone's face onto
yeah.
another picture. So if I was taking a picture of the two of you, I would take 5-10 photos, and it might be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But take it so people look. But if you're taking kids and people, what I say is just take 20 photos. It doesn't mm-hmm. you're not losing any money. And the cool thing is then you can go, okay, Dad Ken is mm-hmm. looking great in this one. You know, little mm-hmm. Sally's looking great in this one. And sometimes you can Photoshop those faces onto the other photo. And all of a sudden get the best shot.
I would also recommend, because this is fun, my mother was a great photographer, and she loved it. And honestly, our family was documented until the day she passed away, because I went, who's going to take pictures? Because she always did the pictures. And our family Christmas party could be as many as 40 people. And one of the things that she enjoyed, and when I look back at the pictures, I love them because people's personalities come out. She'd say, all right, everybody get together here and just talk. And then occasionally look at me, and she'd just keep snapping that she'd get this active picture mm-hmm. of everybody kind of huddled together and laughing and looking goofy instead of everybody looking very stoic and looking
and
right
at
her.
That's great. It's just shoot away. Because
yeah.
we've kind of lost that. You know, you used to get your film developed at the one-hour photo,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
and you would have 24, 36 exposures.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, as with odds even now, and I'm a professional, 4 of the pictures would be good.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you'd have 20 that you were kind of like, oh. But we kind of miss those candid moments.
Mm-hmm.
So that is great advice, is just shoot yeah. away. Shoot people as they're talking. Shoot people as they're mingling. The other fun thing is, you know, we kind of talked is, and Android had it, the Google Pixel had it first that I've seen, is they have a new Add Me feature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing because you can also, you can take a group shot, and then as long as you hold that camera in the same place, somebody can switch out and
mm-hmm.
then,
and then add yourself.
You can add yourself mm-hmm. in the photo.
Which is so cool.
Absolutely amazing. And Google and Android's had it, again, before. And I'm team iPhone, I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a Pixel. I have an iPhone. Google had it first in Google Photos. And if you have an older iPhone, you can do Google Photos. But now the new iPhone 16 and 15 Pro and 15 Pro Max now has a magic eraser. And it's really cool also, because the other fun thing is, as you're shooting away, inevitably you are going to get people in the background
mm-hmm.
who are distracting. You're going to forget your Starbucks cup that's in the picture. You're
right.
going to forget things. And the cool thing is now with the magic eraser in Google Photos or the newer iPhones, you can actually instantly remove some of those distractions.
I love that.
And it's really great.
Yeah.
And it's scary how good it is sometimes, where it'll actually suggest what to remove.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just click on it and it's gone.
Hmm.
But it's kind of cool because, again, if you're looking for those perfect photos, and everybody wants the perfect photo, now with editing and some of that, mm-hmm. you can actually get there pretty easily.
You taught us a couple of visits ago about taking pictures of the moon, and with the full Christmas cold moon being tonight. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've got to try this tonight if it's not too rainy on Sunday night. We take a video?
So this is back to, again, you're at the end of the day, your phone's not going to get the Academy Award-winning, Pulitzer Prize winning best photo of the moon.
Right.
Even the Samsung or Galaxy Note, I think it is, has a moon mode, and it gets pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out they've been called out a little bit because even some of that's AI that enhances the moon a little
really?
Bit.
Really?
There's studies, and some people have said it is. That's the closest you're going to get with a phone to get it. But a cool trick that you can do to get a pretty darn decent photo is on the iPhone and Android Pixels and Samsungs is exactly that. Start a video and then zoom in with the video and go zoom way in. And usually I say don't do that because the farther you digitally zoom in, you're going to lose quality.
Right.
And it always does lose quality. But doing video, zoom in on the moon. And then there's a way on all these phones now, on iPhone, for example, it's a little white button. While you're recording video, you can hit the white button and it'll do a photo
like
from
freeze
the video.
It. Yeah.
And it'll save it as an extra photo in your thing.
Now, can't you go back
and, pretty cool way.
And look at your video, though, and then edit out, like on my Samsung, it shows me all of the different shots in that video, and I can pick and choose what I want.
That's a version of the same idea.
Basically. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So well, it's a cool way. Yeah. Zoom in with video and then do screenshots of the video. But again, it all comes down to changing that exposure.
Okay. Tonight I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be trying because sure. I get so frustrated. I this is a fancy schmancy phone, and the moon is all fuzzy. And then just the other day, I remembered you said take a video and work
and
from
like
that.
And like I said, at the end of the day, that's where Canon, Nikon, Sony are
sure.
still in business.
Yeah.
Because again, the difference of what Julian's going to get with his 400mm zoom lens is a thousand times.
I mean, you can see craters on the moon.
It's amazing what some people are capturing now.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the day because there's a guy that does stuff, and I can't think of his name. It's Andrew something. I think it's like Andrew McCarthy on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. He's been hooking his phone up to and other cameras up to telescopes.
Mm.
And he has done some of the most detailed photos I've ever seen of the moon and all that. And literally, you're seeing craters, and like you said, and I almost can't wait till the next astronauts land on the moon, because I think we're going to get to a day where you're going to be able to see the astronauts on the moon.
Yeah.
Like, technology really is getting...
That is pretty amazing. We're talking with Will Byington. He has a class, and you can be a part of this Monday night Zoom class. It is his shotclubphotoclass.com, and then he's got a couple of classes coming up in January. You can get all those details at shotclubphotoclass.com. We're not going to let him get out of here without answering a couple of your questions you've texted in. So stay with us here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking photography, cell phone photography with Will Byington. Go to willbyington.com. And Will, the blatant plug light is flashing again. Your Shot Club class, tell us about
so
that.
It's really fun. It's really... What I've learned to do is it's very basic. It's very introductory. All skill levels. I've had professional photographers take it to learn more about what their phones can do. I've had people who just got their phones. What I really try to do is really try to show it doesn't matter your skill level. Join us because you will learn new tips and tricks and ideas of ways to just hopefully spark that creativity. What I really want, you know, if I was to say my soapbox of what I want to do is I want people to play. I want people to find the joy we had as kids creating. And I feel like after a certain age, you kind of stop that. You kind of stop creating. You stop making art. You stop having fun. And so shotclubphotoclass.com, it's about a two-hour thing. I do about an hour. And then, you know, I kind of start the class early where people can kind of get in and make sure their Zoom works and all that. And then I do about an hour and then a little more. And then I do Q&A. And I'll stay on as long as people want to answer any questions. And then I have a Facebook group that I've created just for people who've taken the class. And what we're really going to work on in the next year is taking this to another level even of different challenges each week. So like, you know, the first week of January might be the color red, you know, or the next week might be lines. And then I want
people
to submit their photos.
And start looking at things
really
differently.
And create a community of because again, the cool thing about photos is we could all stand together and get three and look at the same scene. But get three exactly different photos.
Yeah.
Totally different photos.
Absolutely.
And so that's the fun. And so shotclubphotoclass.com is that hopefully it creates and sparks your creativity.
Well, you answered Linda in Memphis's question because she wanted to know if she could ask questions if she joins the class. So, yes, there's a Q&A segment there. Also, this comes from Deanna, and she says, I'd love some advice on how to take iPhone photos at night without making the sky look like daylight.
So the fun thing about night mode on iPhone and even on Android and all that is because they do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that, the tip we said earlier about shooting with auto is see where iPhone, for example, on the iPhone with night mode, it'll give you what it suggests. And you're right. A lot of times it comes out looking like daylight. What you can do is you can tap on the iPhone when you're in your camera. If you swipe up, you'll be able to access the different settings. And you can turn on and off your flash. You can turn on and off live mode.
You can in night mode, you can do that.
Well, in all of it. You can kind of adjust all kinds of different settings when you swipe up. But night mode, for example, it'll show up. And it looks kind of like a half crescent moon with four or five lines on the iPhone. When you click on that setting in the iPhone for night mode, it pops up automatically at auto. But what you can do is you can actually swipe right or left. So you can turn it off. But you can also make it longer. You can go to the max. So that's kind of a way you can change it. So, because auto might say it needs to be open for 3 seconds, depending on how long you're trying to capture a shot of. I did night mode on a catamaran off the coast of Croatia earlier this year. And I could actually see the Milky Way. It was amazing. The number of stars you could see. But sometimes you want to change that. So you can swipe it. Instead of doing 5 seconds, maybe do 3 seconds. The other key that I say is the beauty of iPhones and Androids and Samsungs is you can also edit after the fact. So sometimes even if that shot comes out looking almost like a daylight shot, you can then go into edit and change the exposure. And what I kind of say is take it on the night mode.
Okay.
And then sometimes you can dial that back with the exposure right in the iPhone editing setup.
I'm going to try
Android
that.
Setup.
Yeah.
You can change it and make it look a little darker, a little more natural. Play with it. There's so many fun ways to edit your photos right there in your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you used to have Photoshop. Now it's built into your phone, built into different settings, and you can make it look kind of cool. What I've also said sometimes is take the shot with night mode on, kind of back to our testing things. Take it with night mode on and then turn night mode off and see. And sometimes you might even overlay those and kind of do the mixture of both.
Oh, that's fine.
But there's really play with it and see what it says. I know you had another question somebody said about...
Yeah, I don't want us to run out of time because this listener is in South Dakota. And he says, what do you think about the Apple Photos app update? I see people in an uproar about the update and how Apple has ruined all their photos, but I kind of like it. And the more I use it, I'm liking it even more.
You know, does anyone really like change? do we like change? You know, you get used to it. And I will say, everything about social media, we were talking off the air, social media, they seem to have a thing. Every time I think I know what I'm doing on Instagram, they change the algorithm. Every time I think I know what I'm doing on Facebook, they change the algorithm. Change is inevitable. The iPhone Photos app, when you really dive into it and play with it, it hasn't changed that much. They do change stuff, but you can still go and move stuff around. If you scroll all the way to the bottom, they'll let you rearrange. Mm. And for example, like I love marking a lot of my photos as favorites. When I find a shot that I love and I know I want to come back to, I'll mark as a favorite. The initial change in the algorithm, in the iPhone Photos app, they moved favorites, I think, all the way to the bottom. And I just went and changed it and moved it back up. So you can edit, you can change it. I will say the new, again, if you have a 15 or later, 15 or 16, having the Magic Eraser, for example, is life-changing. It is amazing, and it's really fun to play with, to edit. So the editing you can do, some of the filters you can do, and yes, it's alive. It's just like anything. You can just play with it. And once you start really playing with where it puts your photos, you're gonna get used to it. Probably by the time you get used to it, it'll change again. But it's not as bad as
not the end of the world. Yeah.
But now and then, after an update, it's not a bad idea to check with the place you got your phone. For example, just a couple of weeks ago, and this was after the Android update from Verizon that said, no, we're not going to use Verizon to send pictures or text anymore. Now we're switching over to Google. Johnny did everything just right. I did it too. I didn't have any problems on my phone. Johnny had problems on her phone. Took it to the Verizon store, walked in.
Guy was standing at the door, and I said, I have this change that's coming up on November 7th. He said, that's why I'm standing here. This is all I'm doing until the change is done. Yeah. Because it was sticking. It was like a little glitch.
Sometimes I say wait, you know, when they release a new software update, wait till the first or second or third one.
The bugs are worked out.
But this was a case if you had to do it by a specific
November
date.
November 7th, yeah.
And what this did, it now means that you can send photos to an iPhone and you will see all of the stuff.
Yes, clearly.
Yeah.
And videos, because I used to get so frustrated getting videos from an iPhone, and I think, really?
It's like we're all talking different languages.
Yeah.
Do we have any other questions?
I've got two people that said give them information about your class, and so now they know. So hopefully,
shotclubphotoclass.com.
Yeah, you will have a good turnout.
You can also link to it through willbyington.com. That's Will, two L's. B as in boy, Y-I-N-G-T-O-N.
All right, we've got literally 1 minute before we have to break, before we turn into pumpkins. How many cruises did you go in 2024?
This year, I think I did about six. I did
That's
six,
all?
Yeah, I think I did about six.
Oh, it seemed like you were all gone all
the
time.
I did, through Apple Leisure Group Vacations, the old Apple Vacations, I've done a bunch of these photo classes where I've done them in Punta Cana. I did three classes in Punta Cana. I did Cancun three times.
Mm-hmm.
So I did about six trips with them this year.
Yeah.
The Apple Leisure Group, Apple Vacations. I did some cruises. I also did some music festivals down by where y'all go in Miramar Beach, Florida, for a company called Topeka. And I did their Moon Crush festivals. I did one with Lyle Lovett and a couple other really fun ones. So I had some fun travels.
Well, you know you're welcome here anytime you're home for a while.
It is always fun to hang out with you.
Thank you. Oh, and a listener said when you're taking pictures of kids, get down to their level. And I thought, that's a good idea,
too. Brilliant advice.
Yes. Thanks, Will. Merry Christmas.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love that for a whole lot of reasons. One of them being that you rarely get to hear Count Basie play piano. You see him leading the band, but you rarely hear him actually play piano, and that's kind of fun. That is one of Tom's tunes, Tom being Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And Tom, tonight's Tom's Tunes theme is what?
Jingle Bells. Four ways.
Four different ways.
I love that. Now, that was from an old, obviously, an Ed Sullivan show. And I just love that because there isn't enough of Count Basie playing piano.
Honestly, when I heard that.
He was a band leader.
Yeah, I did not know he could play piano. So I was like, oh, okay, well, that's a good place to start.
Because you're used to hearing him do too. Just do the end of songs of doom, doom, doom. And that's about all he does. Three notes, and he's ended the song, and that's it. But, well, hi, Tom.
Hey.
ConsumerGuide.com. That's the place people should go. And people can now follow Tom on Blue Sky.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Yeah, I decided to do that all on my own.
That was you kicking and screaming all on your own, right?
Yeah. Well, as we are getting very close to Christmas and New Year's, and we're kicking into winter driving mode. You have some winter driving tips for us?
I do, yeah. I looked at a bunch of stuff and went through my own personal notes on this, and there are a couple of simple things people can do just to get ready for the cold. And my favorite thing to tell people to do, my single most important thing on the list, is to check your tire inflation. And it affects so many things. It's so important, and it's so simple, and it doesn't sound important, but I promise you it is. If your tires are properly inflated in the winter, one, you're going to have better pothole protection, so that could save your car and your wheels some damage, but your car will also handle better. But this is the important part. If your inflation is different than it should be, the vehicle reads the rotation, the diameter of the tire, incorrectly, and this can affect negatively your stability control, your anti-lock braking system, and your traction control system. So you really want that set up.
So you should not either overinflate or underinflate. You should just go with what the manufacturer recommends. And here's the question. Do you go with the manufacturer reading that is usually on the tires, or do you go with the manufacturer reading that you can find sometime on the side of the door of the car, or what do you do?
The rating of the tire can be a generic rating, and it's not the wrongest thing you can do, but it could be wrong. There's a label inside your car, and it's also in your owner's manual that'll tell you the exact inflation, and you want to use that.
And quite often, the front tire inflation is different than the rear tire inflation.
Yes, it's a great point. And many modern vehicles, modern front-wheel drive vehicles, there's more weight over the front axle, over the front wheels. So usually those are inflated higher. And those might be something like 36 or 38 PSI, while the tires in back might be much lower, 32, 33, something like that. So yes, that can happen, and it's not wrong.
When we get into bitterly cold weather, does that also affect the reading that you're getting on your tire? For example, if you have a tire monitor right there in your car, I know our experience has been when we've been traveling.
I'll never forget, we were driving, it was the middle of January, driving, stayed the night in Nashville, came out the next morning, and we were getting low tire pressure warnings on all four tires because it had been a below zero night.
And we were parked outside. Yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the system that you use. Some tire pressure systems use the rotation of the tire, the same sensors that the anti-lock brake sensors use. And some use something in the valve stem, and some use an internal monitor that's in the in the wheel itself. And these will respond differently to cold. And the problem is that they're typically pretty wrong right after a freeze. So if it suddenly gets cold, don't worry about it too much. And if you are worried, do a visual inspection just to make sure that one of your tires isn't flat. Generally, as you drive and things warm up, the light will go out.
That's exactly what we did. Remember, we were freezing. We were going to Florida, so we didn't have our heaviest coats. And we were out there walking around checking the tires to be sure that, because it was so startling when you get in the car and immediately it's telling you, check tire pressure.
But I think we wound up, it was after about 15, 20 minutes that all of a sudden the check tire pressure lights went away.
Yeah, absolutely. A listener says, Tom, please mention clean all the crud off your headlights. That crud acts like an insulator. Boy, that's something I think when you go to gas up, even if they don't have anything for you to clean, get some Kleenex and just walk around, right, Tom, and just clean those off.
Yeah, as a child of the 80s, and that means I worked at a service station pumping gas, one of the things we always did in the winter, in addition to cleaning the windshield, was to clean the headlights. And it makes a huge difference. It's absolutely important.
He also says the crud acts like an insulator and the headlight bulb will overheat. Oh, and burn out. Have you ever noticed all the burned out headlights during the winter months?
There's a funny extension to that story. I've heard that, and an extension of that is when you replace a bulb, if you do it yourself, you are instructed to wear gloves so that your fingers don't touch the bulb, because the grease off of your fingers can actually stay on the bulb and create ash that will insulate and eventually overheat the bulb.
Wow.
Crazy story.
Yeah. Okay.
That also, you need to check your batteries in cold weather, too.
Yeah, the best thing to do, if your battery is more than 3 years old, I would suggest just replacing it. Don't wait, don't goof around with it, because whatever that costs you, and batteries are expensive these days, they can cost up to $200, but if you are stuck someplace alone in a parking lot, you'll be so glad. You're going to wish you had spent that $200.
But battery replacement is not always as easy as it used to be, particularly with some newer cars where they have model-specific batteries that sometimes come from Europe or someplace else.
Yeah, it's getting harder and harder. And like we talk about European vehicles, like BMW batteries sometimes are in the trunk. So you have to know that. But you do have jumper points under the hood. It's a thing you want to check your owner's manual about in case you're ever in a position to want to jumpstart someone else's car. But it can be difficult. And some of the batteries that are in the trunk, for example, are kind of built into the sidewall. And they can be hard to get to. Maybe just go to some place and have a mechanic do that for you.
Well, speaking of that, Johnny came across a really interesting article about something that allows you to charge your battery. But my question is, would it work with all batteries? Johnny, you've got the article?
Right. This was in the ARP magazine this month. A dead battery used to mean having to have a pair of jumper cables. We all know that.
Right.
And then finding somebody that's willing to help you out to get a jump start. A rechargeable battery pack has enough juice to kickstart a car's battery by hooking it up to the terminal. They're available from several companies, including Gulu, Noco, and Skosh. These devices are about the size of a paperback book, and they start at around $100. Now, I sent this to you, and what's your take on it, Tom?
We had one of these. It was rather heavy duty at Publications International Limited, Consumer Guide's parent company, and it was bigger than the ones we're discussing, and it was probably about $150. It worked very well. We kept it plugged in all the time at the office, so it was always ready to go, and it served us pretty well. It won't jumpstart a diesel, which doesn't really matter much anymore. Not a lot of those out there, but a diesel is going to take more power than that. But for most cars where the battery isn't too badly drained or damaged, this can get you through a charge or two.
Well, one of the things I was curious about, if I understand correctly, you can plug it into your cigarette lighter. Would that work with all batteries?
Probably. I'm trying to think, like a higher compression engine, which you're talking about something high performance, might not want to turn even that way. You're not going to get a whole lot of power through the 12-volt connector in your car. A lot of these also have actual jumper cables attached to them. You might have to go to that.
But the whole idea is I don't want to have to get out and lift the hood and guess, you know, where I'm going to hook it up. And I actually have videos on my phone in the event something like that happens. Where does the red one go and where does the other one go? But you don't want to be doing that in the middle of the night if you're stranded on the side of the road. Well,
no, and I have seen these work where you just plug them into the lighter. You often have to wait 10, 20 minutes for enough power to transfer. But it's not the worst thing in the world to keep in your car.
We're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, consumerguide.com. We've got a lot of ground to cover with Tom. Bunch of questions coming in for him, so stay with us here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. We're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide, and Tom's cartoons theme tonight is Jingle Bells, Four Ways, and this was who and when.
That was Duke Ellington. It's off an album called Never No Lament, and I think that actual recording goes back to 1942.
That's cool. Nice stuff. We're talking about some winter driving tips with Tom. And I'm looking at one of the notes you said, consider using up your washer fluid. I never thought of this. Why?
Yeah, this is a it's a funny thing that people don't think about, but the windshield washer solvent in your reservoir is basically just water and alcohol. There's not much else to it except for blue dye. And the alcohol will evaporate over time, leaving you basically water, which will freeze rather easily. So if you don't mind a little wastage, it doesn't hurt to just use up what's in there and fill it with fresh solvent, which will have the appropriate alcohol content.
That sounds okay. Yeah, the blue goop, as we always called it. Yeah. A listener wants to know, if we go back to jumping vehicles, this comes from 630 area code. Les says, is it possible for a hybrid vehicle to jump another car?
Yes. Interesting thing. Hybrid vehicles use a big battery pack that powers the hybrid system, much bigger, more powerful than the 12-volt battery normally under the hood. But there is still a 12-volt system, like the Prius, for example, still uses a 12-volt battery. And if the battery isn't under the hood, and I don't remember if it is or isn't on the Prius, there are points there that allow you to jumpstart from there. So instead of connecting to a battery, you connect to jump points, which are the same thing, basically.
773 says, best advice I can give you is to get a jump starter that you can get at AutoZone for about $220. But make sure you get it if you have a 6-volt or 8-volt. Make sure you check to make sure that you have the correct size. So he's saying make sure you do this.
So basically check your battery and make sure whatever you're going to use
matches
will work with the battery you have in your vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, a little confusing. All car batteries are 12-volt these days, and whatever charger you buy should be compatible. There is a little switch in there for 6-volt, and that's for, like, lawn equipment and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of regular car chargers have the ability to charge lesser batteries.
For winter driving with all-wheel drive, any specific tips there?
Yeah, a couple of things. Make sure that you know that your car has all-wheel drive and how you engage it in case it's not automatic. And one of the examples I give is that the Chevrolet Equinox, which is a very popular compact crossover, a nice car too, actually has an all-wheel drive off button. So your all-wheel drive defaults off. You want to make sure it's on. Most cars have all-wheel drive kind of standard, and it always engages. But to save fuel economy, some vehicles do disengage the all-wheel drive. You want to make sure you know that and that you turn it on.
Can I take you back to battery for just a moment? Because this is an 847 listener who says, my battery's 4 years old. My mechanic just tested it, said I didn't need to replace it. During the beginning of COVID, I did not drive very much. Should the battery be replaced because it is, in fact, more than 3 years old?
Probably. Your mechanic tested it, so that's some form of reassurance. But even then, an old battery can decline pretty quickly, even though it tests well at idle. So I it's good that it's tested. Good that you did that, and it probably will get through the winter. But I'd like to replace batteries every 3 years, and in fact, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And am I wrong, or if you have an older battery, even if it has tested okay, in extreme temperatures, wouldn't an older battery be depleted much quicker in extreme temperatures?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And they tend to fall off quickly, too. It's not as new car batteries are so darn robust, but after a couple of years, they just lose it.
Now, I'm going to take you back to driving modes. I'm looking here at eco mode. Eco mode is similar to snow mode?
It is, surprisingly.
Yes.
They both do basically the same thing. So in eco mode, for people who don't know what this is, there's a lot of buttons in a lot of cars that say eco or econ. And what that button does is softens your throttle response. So you pressing down on the gas, the impact of that is diminished somewhat. And that is to soften or to slow down the torque delivery to the wheel so that you maintain traction. Additionally, shift points come later. I'm sorry, earlier, again, to reduce the amount of torque that hits the wheel so that everything happens smoother and you don't break traction. And this works for fuel economy, and amazingly, it works for traction in the snow as well. A lot of cars with eco mode will start not in first gear, but second gear.
Mm-hmm.
You will take off more slowly unless you hit the gas hard, which you don't want to do in bad weather. And this prevents there being so much torque that your wheels will break loose. So you can use your econ mode in cold weather and in inclement weather when there's a lot of snow or ice on the ground, and I think you'll find it helpful.
We were watching a video just within the past day or so, and I commented to Johnny, this person doesn't know bleep about how to drive in bad weather conditions. It was a large vehicle stuck in snow, and the person was flooring it, trying to get the vehicle out. And I said to Johnny at the time, as a kid, I learned you don't want to do that. You want to very gently, slowly start rocking the vehicle back and forth. You don't want to floor it and spin your wheels. That's going to do absolutely nothing for you. So isn't this kind of the same thing that eco mode and snow mode is doing? You're slowly trying to get out of this.
Absolutely, yeah. And the slower you go, the less likely you are to lose traction. The other thing that happens, too, when you start spinning your wheels is you start to build this hard surface that gets harder and more ice-like, making it even more difficult to break loose.
Well, that was one of the things, though, that we learned when we moved to front-wheel drive vehicles, is it was You absolutely don't want to do that, but you also should not be dealing with any fishtailing, which we always got with rear-wheel driver, right? That experience of the back end is moving around. We also were taught when we had those rear-wheel drive vehicles that when you have to stop, you're going to pump your brakes. Do we do that now, or now have cars advanced to the point where we don't do that?
Yeah, analog brake systems are so good that you just want to stomp on the brakes and hold the brake. They work so well. They pump so quickly that it's impossible for a regular driver or anyone to possibly mimic how quickly the pumping takes place if you have analog brakes. And everyone has analog brakes now. It's a great technology, and we're very lucky to have it standard.
We're talking about some winter driving tips and a whole lot more with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. We'll take a break and come back with more. Stay with us on WGN. King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. It's one of Tom's car tunes, Tom being Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And Tom, we've heard from Count Basie and from Duke Ellington, and who was that?
That was Earl Scruggs and his Bluegrass All-Stars.
That's fun. We're talking about a whole bunch of things that have to do with winter driving. We're going to segue into some of Tom's road tests and some other things. But one of the things I wanted to touch on before we get away from winter driving is the difference in front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, whatever kind of drive, on slippery roads. And if you lose control, what do you do with what?
Yeah, and if you have all-wheel drive, you should be in the best shape of all. And the situation I think of when you're losing control is generally like in an intersection where you're turning, and you've got a fairly large 90-degree corner to make, and either the front end comes out, the rear end comes out, or the whole vehicle starts to slide sideways. If you're driving an all-wheel drive vehicle, the most likely thing is that the vehicle is going to start to slide sideways without any bias towards the front or rear. The best thing to do under those situations is simply back gently off the gas, and eventually you should start to roll in the direction that the wheels are pointed. And if you know what you're doing and you feel comfortable doing it, you can even try applying just a little bit of gas to kind of pull you through the corner. But you shouldn't get into too much trouble in normal driving in the Chicagoland area with all-wheel drive.
I just had a strange thought. Uh-huh. I'm thinking there's a commercial that has been airing, and I'm trying to think. It's for a GM product, I believe, and it has to do with, what are they calling it, crab walk, where the vehicle literally the vehicle walks from side to side. What happens if you're doing that and it starts sliding?
We're talking about the GMC Hummer, and Hummer is a brand that GM General Motors brought back, and they applied it to GMC. And right now, they're only applying it to a very large, very heavy, very expensive, very powerful electric vehicle. And crab walk is a cool feature where all the wheels turn to the side in the same direction, and you can use it to make a sort of diagonal slide out of a difficult position. It's handy off road. And I don't think you're allowed to crab walk for more than 5 miles an hour.
Those commercials are just, it's a hoot.
Yeah.
But is it really a selling point? I mean,
People like buttons in their cars. And that's a button that does something that people can ask you about. If you're the owner of that vehicle and you just spend $120,000 for your Hummer, you want people to ask you about the buttons in your car. And you just pretend like you crab walk once and it was really cool and it saved your life, and there you go.
And then you move on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, before we move on, a listener has an excellent tip for this time of the year. If you have a spare tire, check the tire pressure.
Yeah.
Three-year-old spare tire is basically a flat tire, and you don't want to find out when you need it.
Great point.
And one final cold weather, bad weather driving tip that I would have, and this that I can hear right now, a lot of people are going to glaze over when I say this. Read your manual's instructions for bad weather driving, particularly if you have a newer car. The technology has changed significantly, and you need to learn how your individual vehicle functions under bad weather conditions. Take the time. It's maybe 15, 20 minutes out of your life, and if it gets you familiar with how your vehicle works in that emergency situation, that's a good thing.
Or marry a husband who reads all manuals. And then you just ask him, how does it work? And then you don't have to read the boring manual.
Okay, we're going to segue to, what are you driving?
Oh, man, I'm driving something that I think is historically more significant than anyone knows. But the Toyota Camry, which we have known and loved in America for decades, is redesigned for 2025. And one of the big changes this year is it has gone all hybrid. So gone is the base four-cylinder engine, gone is the smooth and powerful V6 engine, and for 2025, the vehicle is only available as a hybrid. And Toyota has done this before. The Venza, which is their more or less premium compact crossover, and their Sienna minivan are also only hybrid. So Toyota's been making this move, and it's interesting because they're probably going to take slightly lower sales volume in exchange for a slightly higher sales transaction prices. But this is a very good car, and it's a very good hybrid. And I think that if you're still looking for a midsize sedan, consider this and don't worry about the fact that it's hybrid only. It's a good hybrid, and you may not notice.
Wasn't that the most popular vehicle for a time?
For years and years and years, and I think last year it still did 300,000 units. Wow. So it is still astonishingly popular for a sedan.
I guess that kind of amazes me that you would pull back with something that popular and just say, well, you're not going to be able to get it the way it was available before when it was so wildly popular.
They made an interesting trade-off here, too. So to go hybrid this year, the point of entry for a Camry now is about $32,000, and that's up from about $28,000 a couple of years ago. And basically, you're paying for that hybrid to move up there. But the thing about paying extra for a hybrid, especially something like a Toyota Camry hybrid, is you're going to make up most of that money in resale value anyway. And in the meantime, you're going to save a lot of money on gas.
Really, resale value. I'm looking.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. It's interesting, but hybrids do demand more at resale time. So it's a good thing to do. They cost more new, but they sell for more later.
Okay.
Alyssa, can I take you? This just may be a statement. I'm not sure, but a listener says I've been shopping for a Honda recently and discovered it has an import tax. Like a Civic Duty,
Well, that's I have no idea what that would be, and there's no reason why that would ever reach a consumer. That's very strange. I would be very leery of that.
Yeah. In fact, 773, if you want to give us some more details, because I read that and said, since when?
Yeah, I've never seen that before. I've never heard that. An import duty, whatever that is, it would be handled at a much higher level than the consumer level.
Hmm.
Yeah, just really quick, before we get away from winter driving, winter driving with an EV, anything different we should know about with an EV?
The only thing, it might be handy to know what your drive wheels are. A lot of EVs are all-wheel drive, and they handle pretty neutrally because the battery is big and heavy and below the floorboard and pretty evenly divided or situated between the front and rear axles. So in terms of general handling, they should handle pretty well in the snow. But here's the thing. EVs are not necessarily front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive. They differ a lot by brand and by you know, application. So you want to check that. The Chevrolet Blazer, for example, is offered in front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive, and all-wheel drive. So you kind of want to know which one you have when you start to hit the slippery stuff.
You kind of want to know when you're buying it, too, because I'd be shocked if I bought a rear-wheel drive.
Well, and we've told the story before about a friend of ours who bought it was a Chrysler 300, and in the middle of winter, he didn't realize that he bought a rear-wheel drive car that had the Hemi, and he was not a happy camper sliding all over the place, but he hadn't bothered to test it.
Those were famously dicey in bad weather, and a lot of people bought those not understanding what they were getting. And yeah, if they equipped them with the Hemi, they were in even more trouble.
Hmm. We're going to take a quick break and come back. Do we have any recalls that we need to mention this week, Tom?
A couple of big ones, if you'd like.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll get got your attention now, everybody. Listen up. We're talking cars. Tom's nice enough to join us a couple times a week, actually a couple times a month, to talk cars. And we try to cover a lot of ground, including some of your questions at 312-981-7200. You can text those in to us. He's with us for a few more minutes here on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. Brian Setzer, I love that.
I thought that was Lawrence Welk.
thank you, friends.
That's a good version. That's good. I would love to see his Christmas show sometime when he's got the whole band.
This big band.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah. Have you ever seen him, Tom?
No, but I got in early, right? I was a Stray Cats guy in high school, so I'm a big Brian Setzer fan.
Yes.
One of our fun memories was being down at the Ryman Theater in Nashville, and we were backstage at the Ryman, and Brian Setzer was there because he'd come because he wanted to see Duane Eddy, who was being honored. We were emceeing the concert. And it was one of Muriel Anderson's All-Star Guitar Night shows.
And we were actually stuck in a stairwell with him, and I got to look close at his hair. And I thought, wow, I just wish I could touch it, you know, to see. Because it was a great Bufanti thing that he had going on. But he looked great anyway. We were just talking off the air about, it seems like it was just yesterday.
Yeah.
Remember last year when you were a little peeved at
the lack of attention being paid to the problems with electric vehicle batteries in cold weather,
or the way it was being presented, like, you know, all electric vehicles are going to be dying, and I remember you got up on a soapbox at one point. Refresh us.
Yeah, what had happened, and it seemed the whole thing snowballed out of an event at O'Hare Airport. And basically, people who had left Teslas parked there for a week or so during an extreme deep freeze came back to find that their batteries weren't as full as they were when they dropped their cars off, and it was 48 degrees. So there was a rush for people to go and take their cars to Tesla charging stations in the area. And there's one right by O'Hare. I don't know exactly where it is, but it's right there in Rosemont someplace. And people would get there, and it turned out that their cars weren't charging. And that sounds like a terrible thing, and it sounds like a disaster, but one of the things about EVs, and one of the things that makes life with an EV easier, is that if you're going to charge, you should use the app included with your car and let it know that you're going to a charger. And one of the things that will happen on the way is that your battery will basically be preconditioned, which means that the car will bring the battery up to a temperature that makes it better and easier to charge. Mm-hmm. So this thing that happened at O'Hare shouldn't have happened. And what we had was a lot of owners of vehicles who didn't understand how their vehicles worked. Also, there was a problem with the fact that Tesla didn't actually snowplow the area. So the whole thing looked like a nightmare on TV. But there wasn't actually a mechanical issue with the cars. It was people trying to charge their vehicles in extreme cold and not knowing exactly how to do that. And as we pointed out at the time, that people were charging just fine in northern Minnesota,
right,
where it was actually colder. So you need to know that your vehicle probably, if you're going to public charge outside when it's really cold, you need to precondition your battery. And that's something that the app you have for charging will take care of.
And again, I know I'm beating a dead horse. Read your manual.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, one of the frustrations you felt was the way media was carrying the story. They weren't telling the whole story.
Right. It just made it seem like, and we all know that it's difficult to charge an EV when it's cold, and that your battery's capacity is diminished in cold weather. And so the news that came out of this particular event really just amplified those particular facts in a pretty inaccurate way.
Mm-hmm. So in that case, the media was focusing on the product rather than focusing on the owner's lack of knowledge about what they should be doing with the product.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm no huge fan of Tesla for a bunch of reasons, but the vehicles, especially the Model Y and the Model S, they're really good vehicles, and people who own them are happy with them, and they work very well, and they have great range, and they charge just fine. So the whole thing was very misleading.
By the way, I'm waiting for the lawsuit that we expect to occur. I sent Tom a picture of a Tesla Cybertruck, and it was compared with what was the old vehicle? It was a dump truck or something from the 30s or something, and it's the same design.
Same shape, yeah.
Well, we're going to segue into recalls.
Yes, you said there's a couple of biggies.
There's four big ones, but two affect consumers more directly. The first one, 200,000 Honda Pilots and Honda Passports are being recalled for fuel leak issues. That's 23 and 24 Passports and 23 through 25 Pilots. And the problem is, and I don't know what it is with Japanese maker vehicles lately and really fundamental issues, but the fuel filler is falling apart and gas is hitting the ground.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's no good. For a bunch of reasons. So word is going out on January 6th. This is probably a pretty easy fix because it's just a couple of parts. But if you see gas on the ground when you're filling, that's what's going on here. And you may want to just try and fill a little bit more slowly.
Hmm. Okay. The other recall?
The other big one here is 226,000 Hyundais. These are Elantras. That's the small sedan. And Santa Fe's. That's the compact large crossover, over damaged rear view camera. And this is just something that happened in the car during manufacturing, but the circuit board that handles that can be damaged for some reason and not show you the image that from the backup camera. So that word is going out on that on January 19th.
Will they replace the camera or?
Ooh. You know, increasingly, what happens is that they replace the entire infotainment system. It's actually easier than trying to fix something in it.
Really?
This is an electronic element that's inside of the car. So I think they're just going to replace the whole thing.
That seems wasteful, but
yeah.
Who am I?
Speaking of cameras, a lot of cars today have cameras. Is that cause for concern when taking cars through car washes that could then have a strong spray going onto those cameras?
You know, Steve, I think actually the opposite. I think that after like a heavy snowfall with a lot of salt, you might want to go through a car wash to clean that stuff off. And I have driven a number of vehicles. They seem like they're pretty robust. The sensors themselves, you can see them, and they look like pop rivets in the front and rear bumper. And they don't look like much, but they're expensive. They're easily damaged. But car washes do not seem to damage them. But I have driven vehicles after a heavy snow flaw, and the car is crusted with salt, and some of the sensors no longer work because they are blocked by the salt. And yeah, I'll get warning signals that do not go away on the dashboard or on the instrument panel.
We have a, well, I guess it's 20 years old now, a Cadillac with a night vision. That's our second with night vision. And the first one, remember, Steve, whenever we drove in snow, you get these really weird, creepy images on the screen. And then it got better by the second one that we got. But it's amazing technology.
Does your car see dead people?
You know, it does. It does. As long as they're still warm. If they get cold, it doesn't see them.
But I will never forget, one of the selling points for this to us was the night vision technology then. It was the kind of technology that had been developed during the Gulf War. And we were driving down our street in the wee hours of the morning, and I could tell you every single car that just recently pulled up because we could see the reflection of the the hot
heat,
the heat sensor coming from the car. And if a human being was hiding behind a bush, you would see the shape of their body because of the heat image.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little freaky.
Yes, and Steve always says whenever he would see this, he'd say, this should be in a crime movie.
It should be.
Because this technology is perfect, because you say, well, I've been home all the time. Oh, no, no.
No, you haven't, because I could see the heat signature from your car.
Yes.
But also,
It was interesting.
But when we found it most useful was driving in some of the back roads in Florida in the wee hours of the morning, and you would see the deer off to the side.
Wow.
So it was really a safety feature.
Yeah, yeah. You would hope to see their warm bodies before they saw your headlights.
Yeah.
Right?
There were interesting ads that ran in Automotive News, which reaches a lot of auto dealerships. And that system was actually co-developed with Raytheon, the defense contractor. And I guess General Motors had a hard time selling that from their position.
They never sold it correctly.
No. These ads, I think, were a petition to dealers to try to get their salesmen more involved in selling the system.
And to me, night vision was one of two forms of technology that General Motors never knew how to sell well. One was night vision. The other was all-wheel steering.
Yes, quadra-steer.
Quadra-steer, which was wonderful technology.
Were we in the Durango?
We tested the – it was one of the Denalis.
Oh, Denali. I knew
GMC
it started with
Denalis,
a D.
And it was wonderful technology that GM just didn't have a clue how to sell it.
Yeah.
No, they totally biffed. That was a total whiff. It was a shame because really handy stuff.
Tom, can you stay for a few minutes? Because we have to break right now. I do want to come back if you can and talk a little bit about this GM Cruise shutdown and then tie up some loose ends here. We're talking with Tom Appel.
And we also have a really interesting cartoon that we pulled for Tom.
Okay. So stay with us here on WGN.
My sleigh, make a funky ride. Red and green lights blinking on the underside. Make it like it's the baddest man on the scene. Everybody gonna see me coming up Canal Street. Gonna pimp my sleigh with big chrome rails. A hubcap spinners, fins on the tail. I know it's not much to look at now, but when I paint it red and add that reindeer power, gonna pimp my sleigh,
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
If I had a sleigh, I would pimp it.
Oh, yeah. That's Husband from Galactic and Pimp My Sleigh. And, Tom, we had to play that. That's,
oh, yeah.
I know that's one of your favorite cartoons.
That would actually sound good with a good sound system.
Oh, it would.
You know, turned up loud so that when the people pull up next to you, they're like, don't look over there. Yeah. They're really blasting their music so loudly.
Hey. By the way, the blatant plug light has just gone on. So, Tom, people should go to and follow you, and where should they check you out?
Yeah, check us out at consumerguide.com. Big news, our 2025 Best Buy picks are now live. So if you are looking for a new car or know someone who is, they should check this list. It's a great place to start your test drive shopping. Also, this week we spoke to Mark Gillies of Volkswagen about the new ID. Buzz. That is Volkswagen's retro-themed, retro-looking minivan that happens to be electric. It's very popular in social media. You'll start seeing them on the roads now, but if you want to know that vehicle, check out our podcast.
By the way, I have to mention that one of the things you will see on consumerguide.com is the review of the 2024 Dodge Charger Daytona, and Jill Simonello did that.
Uh-huh.
And on Jill's post on Facebook, I saw that people were complaining that this Charger didn't look like a Charger because it only had two doors. And Jill quite correctly pointed out, go back to the original Charger, and it had two doors.
Yeah, the relationship between the Charger and the Challenger probably lost on people these days, but the Charger was really a muscle car, and the Challenger was really a pony car, and they lived side by side, but both were two doors back in the day. Mm-hmm. The Charger didn't become a four-door until recent memory.
Well, before we run out of time tonight, there was one story I wanted to get to, and that's the General Motors, the Cruise project ended for financial reasons?
Yeah, I was so excited about Cruise because it seemed to be that Cruise, a division of General Motors, a wholly owned subsidiary, but not a partner. It's not a division like Buick or Chevrolet. It was a wholly owned subsidiary. Cruise was working on an autonomous vehicle and then on autonomous vehicle technology. And at one point in time, it was understood per General Motors that the division by 2026 or so was going to start delivering revenue as much as $30 billion a year. And this was building autonomous taxis. And if you drove around San Francisco or Los Angeles or I think Phoenix, I think that's where Cruise was, they had driverless taxis working out there. Then they were collecting fares and they were working legally. And there was that terrible accident last year where a woman who had been struck by one vehicle had been forced in front of a Cruise vehicle and crushed by that vehicle. And it called all sorts of attention to this. And one of the things that we're learning about autonomous vehicles is that this last step from like 95% safe to 100% safe is really going to be tough. And General Motors has backed away. They had built an electric vehicle called the Cruise Origin, which looked a little bit like a subway car, but smaller. But it actually had sliding side doors and sort of comfortable-looking couch-style seating. They stopped building that. And then they stopped working on building cars at all. And they were just working on the technology. Now they are going to fold Cruise, which was independent, but not public, into General Motors. So we're going to see Cruise disappear.
So they stood to make a whole lot of money, but they're pulling back because they're losing money at this point?
Yeah, a couple of things. Investors really liked Cruise early on. But as we got closer to full functionality, we realized that the money might not be there as easily as people had thought. Hmm. And there is competition out there. There's Waymo, which is owned by Alphabet, the right. Google people. They're still working on this, and they do have cars testing in some cities. And there's a company called Zoox, Z-O-O-X, which is doing the same thing, and that's owned by Amazon. And then Tesla's still trying to do this. I think we talked about the Cyber Cab, which was Elon's last most recent reveal. So you still have a lot of people out there competing to be in this space, but whether or not this ever happens is unclear. And we don't know how legislators ultimately are going to respond to this either. At this point, it's still the Wild West out there, and the rules and regulations vary by state and even by city. So it's unclear what the potential is for this technology. So General Motors says, hey, we're just going to work on working on things like Super Cruise and Ultra Cruise, which is already available on certain Cadillac and electric vehicles, mm-hmm. which is semi-autonomous.
And it was just a couple weeks ago that we played a tape of Gino Salamone in, I believe it was, a Waymo vehicle.
In Los Angeles,
yes. In Los
yes.
Angeles, yeah.
And it was his experience of first time being in a driverless vehicle. And actually, I think he came away pretty impressed by the experience. But let me take you back to the cruise project. So this means that people will lose their jobs, no doubt, right?
There are 1,800 cruise employees, last time I checked.
Oh.
And I think most of them will lose their jobs.
Oh, boy.
Now that they're not working on developing a vehicle specifically, and the technology more or less overlaps with what General Motors already has in terms of Super Cruise, I think a lot of jobs are going to be lost, yes.
Hmm. That's too
good
bad.
Good jobs.
Yeah. Wow. Too bad. Any other vehicles that you've road tested lately you want to mention?
Yeah, I was in the Genesis G80. That is Genesis' midsize sedan. More or less competition for the BMW 5 Series, and nothing special here. It's not hybrid. It's not it's not electric. It's just powered by a gasoline V6, and it is a charming vehicle that is well priced against something like a BMW 5 Series or an Audi A6. It has a beautiful interior, fantastic power. It's not an especially good handler. But everything else about this vehicle is fantastic. Hmm. So if you don't want to have the same luxury cars that everyone else does, check this out.
Comfortable for tall guys?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, funny you would mention that. If I have the seat all the way back, the rear seat space is a little tight.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Handling, though, that surprises me that's questionable.
Well, isn't this one of the vehicles that they didn't necessarily want to make sporty? They went more for the luxury end of things with this?
Hmm.
They did, and Genesis is going to slowly roll out a line of vehicles a little bit like BMW M or Mercedes AMG called Magma, and those will be the sporty versions of these vehicles.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of curious. I've seen some of the initial photos of it. What is it, the G90?
Uh-huh.
Isn't that supposed to be their next ultra sedan competitor with BMW and some other people?
Yeah, G90, there is a G90 on sale already, and that's their big sedan. The next generation of that should take things up an interesting notch or so. But that does compete with, like, the 7 Series at BMW or the S-Class at Mercedes. And it is more affordable than those vehicles.
Okay, before we get out of here, you need to say hey to someone.
Oh, yeah. So every Saturday night I get to the health club, and my friend Ted is there, and Ted is a loyal Steve and Johnny fan.
Hey, Ted.
And Ted keeps track of when I'm on the show. So we talk about that later in the week. So, hey, Ted.
Okay. And does Ted grade you?
Yes.
He does not. He does not. But he is interested in some of the stories, and he rolls his eyes at others. So,
good.
So he's a good gauge of what I say being interesting or not.
Okay. Well, we always find it interesting when you're with us, and we thank you for your time.
And again, if people want to follow you, they should do it on Blue Sky.
Car Guy Tom on Blue Sky.
And go to consumerguide.com.
And your podcast drops when, Tom?
Every Tuesday morning, the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, new episode every Tuesday.
And you can catch it live on Mondays.
If you want to listen, it's live at the Talk Zone Radio Network at 3 p.m. Chicago time.
Awesome. Have a great week, Tom. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
More coming up. Stay with us at WGN.
You know the weatherman is the snowflakes. Make this Christmas bright. Santa's sleigh is on its way. I hear it's taking flight. But if this house ain't rocking, I'd just as soon have a lump of coal. I need a good old-fashioned Christmas from the roots of rock and roll. I want to hear some Elvis Presley, a little Brandon Lee. When Bobby Helms rocks Jingle Bells, that's Christmas time to me. A sleigh ride with a vengeance will take me back to where I want to go. I need a good old-fashioned
old-fashioned Christmas from the roots of rock and roll. Now you can have your Bing and that the King and that's just fine, but let me hear Chuck Berry running Rudolph right on time. And if Steamrolling Man how makes you think you gotta chill, dig up a ghost of Christmas past, a specter called him Phil. So when the mistletoe is hanging, the moon glow's getting bright, and Santa Claus, now don't you pause, cause Christmas is tonight. Bring on those Yuletide oldies and fill my stocking up with Christmas gold. I need a good old-fashioned Christmas from the roots of rock and roll. Oh, pull high!
Steve King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio.
I know him.
That's Baby. That is my 1959 Gibson ES-355. I have owned Baby since she was born back in 1959, and she still sounds good. That was recorded at Jim Peterick's studio several years ago.
With Larry Millis behind the control board.
Mm-hmm. And that's, well, you can see the video for that. Go to Steve and Johnny Show on YouTube. And click on the Christmas playlist, and you'll find that. We'll also post a link to that. That's a song that I recorded. Oh, how many years ago was it?
It was pre-COVID, so it was probably, oh my gosh, 2019.
Was it 2000? No. Well, yeah, COVID was 2019.
No, COVID started in 20. Started in early 20.
But I had recorded it before that.
That version that you played?
Yeah.
Okay, whatever you say.
Okay.
I'm just along for the ride.
I will double check. Anyhow, it's just the video has some shots of some fun old rock and roll Christmas stuff and, and a few pictures of us. And we'll post a link to the video on the Steve and Johnny Facebook page. So,
do you find yourself saying, and I do this so often, well, it was before COVID. It happened, you know, pre-pandemic.
I need to you know, now you've got me wondering.
It was before that because...
Let me double check.
Shortly...
Okay. In the description, you mentioned it specifically.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was uploaded December of 2020, but you say, well, this was recorded a while back.
Well, that doesn't help. A while back. We're debating the year. Because I recall that you were having a throat issue.
I was, which is why I want to go back in and record the vocal on that, because that the day that I recorded that, I was having a really bad problem.
Swallowing,
and it wound up where I had an operation.
A couple months later, you had to have surgery for, of all things, do you mind if I tell this story?
You can tell the story.
A salivary gland stone in the salivary gland that's in your neck.
Now, okay, a little too much medical minutia. But
no, it's Christmas.
Asked,
everybody does this in their Christmas letters. So,
a normal salivary gland stone would be about the size of maybe a grain of rice.
Actually, he said smaller than a grain of rice.
But he said what I had in my salivary gland was about the size of an M&M.
Mm. So what happens is, and this is what happened to you, the salivary gland, when it is basically clogged by this stone, causes... Why is my mouth watering as I'm talking about this? Because that's what a salivary gland does. It causes your throat to close. When we went to the emergency room, we were actually told, because where we live in Florida... At this time, we didn't have an emergency facility right on the beach. We would have to drive over this bridge to get to town, to get to an emergency room. And we had gone there, and it wasn't a frantic experience going there. But once we got there, it was kind of a panic, because when the doctor said, well, where do you live? And we told him where we lived. And he said, well, that's a long ride over here to the hospital. You should be prepared to do a what's the word for it?
A tracheotomy.
Tracheotomy, yeah. Yes. That's, mm-hmm. See, I blocked it out because I remember looking at him going, what? He says, yeah, yeah, if he can't breathe because the throat, I'm like, why are we even leaving the hospital? But there was nothing they could do for you at that point. He says, no, you have to have surgery. We can't do that. You're just going to be lying here if you stay. So go home and pray and eat sour things in hopes that it's going to move it. Mm-hmm. But that turned out to be an aggravator, because when the saliva would gather as a result of eating sour things, it couldn't go anywhere.
Yep.
So we soon found out that that was not a good idea. But that was weird and scary, and I don't know anybody in my life has ever experienced that.
God bless the doctor, Dr. Gibson.
Yep.
Dr. Brian Gibson. He has an office now in Lynn Haven, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and he wasn't just boasting, he said, I want to do the surgery. He said, I don't think anyone can do the surgery as effectively as I can. And after he did the surgery, he stayed for 4 hours to make sure that I came out of it okay, and that I could smile, that I could blink, because he wanted to make sure that he hadn't accidentally cut a nerve. Mm-hmm. That could have really altered the course of my existence.
His thought was, if you went to another doctor, he said, I don't know if they're going to take the time that I'm going to take. Mm-hmm. And he said, you may come out with the side of your mouth is sagging, and your eye is goofed up, and you might never speak on the radio again because things will be so very different. And you said, okay, looks like you're my doctor. Let's do it.
So that was what was going on while I recorded that song. By the way, are you ready for a reality check? I just found...
2012?
What are you going to say?
12?
No, a little later than that.
Okay.
It was in 2014.
Oh, okay. 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
How time flies. Literally. Well, I remember the weather the day we drove out there, and it was 10 years ago.
And I hadn't realized that this was the 10-year anniversary of that.
Yeah.
But it was recorded at Jim Peterick's studio, and everything on there, good, bad, or indifferent, was me.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was fun.
I was present for moral support.
Yes.
That was all. That's about as good as it gets.
And my thanks to Larry Mellis, because we did it in one afternoon. Just recording all the various tracks and things.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I did not play was drums. We just used a drum track with that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else was me.
It's a gorgeous studio, too.
Oh, it's a wonderful studio.
It really is. Yes. We're going to take a break. We are rapidly getting to the close of the show. And
there's so much stuff that we still haven't done.
I know. We've got a list of things. We're going to try to roll through a few of these things after we come back on WGN.
I'm feeling pretty great. Got lockers on my plate. I love this holiday. I love this holiday. And kiss love is a day. Like candles 1 through 8. And a new one every day. I love this holiday.
I'm spinning dreidels, onions and potatoes.
Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. I love that group. And again, that you've known about it, but
I know
you didn't share the wealth. And I just discovered them, and I absolutely love them. It's 6:13, And that's their version of Shake It Off, or their take on Shake It Off.
Yes, the Taylor Swift song. 613, if you look them up, because I'm so impressed with their videos. They're so well done. It's S-I-X and the number 13, 1-3. So S-I-X, 1-3.
Really good stuff.
Yeah.
We got to try and get them on the show.
Well, I reached out to them. You know, now that we've been friends for so long, unbeknownst to you, said, is there any chance we can get you on the radio? If not at Christmas, maybe we can get you on the radio the next holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Because we laughed. We said they actually have an event coming up in Skokie, Illinois. And we got excited, and we found out that, A, it was private, and B, it was in 2020.
I think it's June of 2026.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many things we didn't get to yet. One of the things I wanted to mention, a couple blatant plug things.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is that, let's see if I got this here. Okay, because I sent myself some messages. And this past week, we had mentioned that we lost a dear friend, Dan Fabian.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to a service for Dan, and we ran into several friends from the WGN family. One of them was Steve Cochran. And while we were talking with Steve, he reminded us that he is again going to be doing his New Year's Eve show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to CochranShow.com and get more information on that. But it's going to be, oddly enough, on New Year's Eve, 2 p.m. at the Rao Center in Crystal Lake. And as he says, it's a New Year's Eve for people that can't stay awake until dinner. And then at 7 p.m. at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. And that's, as Steve says, New Year's Eve for people who can't stay awake till midnight.
It's been wildly popular over the years. And I think, I'm not telling tales out of school, but I think he said this looks like it might be the last one.
Yeah.
So if it's been a tradition in your household to get out to one of his shows on New Year's Eve, you don't want to miss this one.
Yeah, and he's going to have some friends joining him at both shows. So just go to CochranShow.com. That's CochranShow.com. And you can see information about both shows.
And ticket price.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
And another thing we want to mention, another blatant plug, is our friends up at Guitar Works in Evanston. We mentioned that they're going to be open on Sundays through Christmas, but they're also doing a food drive. So if you go to Guitar Works, and it's 709 Main Street in Evanston, phone number 847-475-0855, and that's just off the top of my head. It is a terrific mom-and-pop guitar store. But along with looking for that gift for the guitar player on your Christmas list, they're doing a food drive. So if you could take any canned foods, they will make sure that it gets to people who need it. They're doing this through the end of the year.
So if you're walking to the L,
yeah,
and you're on Main Street and you got a couple cans of soup you want to drop off, do that right there in the store. And they get a great turnout every year.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. Well, speaking of food, I have been offering up a gluten-free menu.
Oh, yes.
And a gluten-free recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I wanted to do tonight is for date nut bread, which was always a tradition in our household. And the date nut bread was baked in cans. So we would save vegetable cans. And it was fun because if you got a tall, skinny can that olives came in, you'd get a tall, skinny loaf, or you get a fat can that fruit cocktail came in. And then my job as a kid was to cut out the wax paper to line the inside of the cans and to cut the circle out to drop in the bottom of the can. And then mom would make the dough I make the dough now gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of a long recipe, but I've got it available to you on our blog. And people who've tried it gluten-free say, really? You can't tell the difference. You do not know the difference.
And this is one of the reasons why I keep nagging Johnny to do the cookbook, because not just because she's my wife. She is a wonderful cook, and you can't tell. We've had people that didn't know that the food that Johnny is making is gluten-free. And it's just really great-tasting food.
And date nut bread is not a fruit cake. It's dates with nuts. And I'd like to put the maraschino cherries in it because it looks good, because it's a brown bread. And the neat thing about it is when you shake it out of the can and it's wrapped in the wax paper, leave it in the wax paper, then wrap it in saran wrap, and put a bow on it, and it's a great gift because you get a whole roll of date nut bread, and boy, does it taste yummy with cream cheese. And now we've slipped into the food zone.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
It's going to get ugly for the next 45 minutes.
Yep.
As we're trying to get home for our dinner. But back to the date nut bread. It is not a really complicated recipe because you got your sugar, your butter, eggs, flour, and I use a gluten-free flour. I mention a brand that I recommend, easily accessible at your Jewel, Mariano's, Woodman's, dates. You love dates just as a fruit. Well, when you chop them up and you soak them, you get them nice and soft, you chop them up and you put them in your date nut bread, they are so good. So I'll be sure that this recipe is readily available to you. But if you want it now, tonight, so you can write your shopping list, just go to our blog and you can, in the search bar, either on the right-hand side on your desktop or on your phone across the top, just write gluten-free and it will come up.
Yeah. And you will find there are a number of posts that have to do with a gluten-free diet. And because we've been doing this for how many years now?
Over 20.
Yeah.
I know. I have a hard time thinking. I'm like, what? That was 10 years ago? This was over 20 years ago?
Oh, I'm doing a real segue.
You signaled for a turn, okay. So go ahead.
Because there's so many things we wanted to get to. Speaking of things that have been going on for years, Blue Bloods.
Oh, my gosh. Don't get me started on that. We spent the summer of Blue Bloods.
And Blue Bloods had like 14 seasons.
14 seasons.
Okay?
We had never watched the show. So somehow we came across an episode and went, you know what? This is a darn good show. And there were two networks that were carrying the seasons in order. So
the
we recorded them.
Yep.
And we watched season 1 to 14. And we would stay up to 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning watching 4 and 5 episodes back to back. And we were loving it.
It was the norm. When we'd get home from a Saturday night show, we'd watch at least 3 or 4 episodes of Blue Bloods. And so we were anticipating, as many people were.
I had my Kleenex ready. I thought, this is going to be so
anticipating
sad.
Anticipating the final episode of Blue Bloods.
What a disappointment. What a disappointment.
It seemed like they just threw a whole lot of things. They said, okay, well, we got to wrap this up. We're going to kill somebody. And
somebody's going to get married.
And we'll have a baby. But it's like these things all happen conversationally throughout the show.
Yeah.
And
but we still had blood and guts. I would have been happy if they'd skipped the blood and guts and we just had like a family around the table talking about 14 years.
And I'm not sure what the reason was. It just seemed like
they
didn't have enough time to...
No, I think they were mad. I really kept thinking that up until the end, they thought somebody was going to come along and save the show. But it was too expensive. They just... Yeah. Even though they were bringing in the ratings.
But they did leave it kind of open for the possibility, because they didn't kill everybody off.
That's right. Darn, they didn't kill everybody off on the show.
And I know we may be in the minority because there are some Blue Bloods diehards, but we were Blue Bloods diehards.
Well, yeah.
And it was disappointing.
This was the summer of Blue Bloods. Yes.
So hang it on your nose.
You could have done better.
Yeah. Oops.
Do you hear it? I hear it.
I hear it. And I see the lights are starting to flicker.
That's a Zamboni coming our way.
That's...
clearing a path for us to get out of here, to go home to a meatloaf.
That's Big Plug Bob.
Big Plug.
On his Zamboni. And that means it's time for our last call, if you would like to be our last caller, at 312-981-7200. And there's so many things we didn't mention yet.
Quick, say one real quick.
Okay, I'll mention them after the break. 312-981-7200 if you would like to be our last caller. As long you can win something from the goodie list, as long as you haven't won anything in the past 2 months or 60 days, whichever comes first.
Mm-hmm.
So 312-981-7200.
And you don't have to have anything pithy to say. And that's with a T-H, by the way.
Yes.
I talked to somebody the other day that just learned that the white part of an orange is pith. And I looked at her and I said, you're kidding. It was like, because we were joking about the other word with the S's, not the T-H. And I said, yeah, you know, that's the bitter
part. Was there another word?
That's the bitter part of the orange. And she, what? What? I never heard that. Yeah.
News to me.
What? You too?
Never heard that before.
Pith, P-I-T-H?
I just thought it was that goopy stuff on the outside of the orange.
I like yours better. That bitter, goopy stuff.
Yep.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come right back for our last caller here on WGN.
It's that time again. We gotta say goodnight. You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend.
Uh-huh. Oh, don't do that.
Ooh. All right, people.
Yeah.
It's time to go home.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Yep.
Losing time.
Losing time.
Head on out. So, let's go. You don't have to go home.
Yeah, you really kind of do.
But you can't stay.
Literally, within the past few minutes. Okay, this is, we're complete honesty. Johnny and I both hit the wall.
I know.
Within the past couple minutes.
We made the mistake of talking about our meal when we get home. And it's like, am I home yet? What? And then we looked at this list that we bring in of our topics. Quick, roll through them.
Literally, the couple things to get to very quickly. One, we never got to the Canada mailing.
Yes, the strike in Canada. So be aware if you're planning on sending things to Canada, and hopefully they're going to end this strike, but it's going to affect your options if you have things you want to mail USPS to Canada. There's a strike there.
Okay. Another thing, next week, full show.
Yes.
9 o'clock.
Yes. Party. Party. Yes.
We are going to do our on-air Christmas party. Next week, Patrick Crispin will be joining us, and he'll have some holiday computer suggestions
some
and also
ideas.
Some more cybersecurity stuff, because things are getting crazy. You will have another...
Sorry. I just yawned on you.
Yes.
I tried to cover it up.
Julian, you want to finish the show?
We tried to get Big Plug Bob to finish the
show.
We'll
call it the Big Pub Bit.
Okay.
I can't even finish
the show.
I can
see you're doing it.
All right.
Hold on.
That's all, folks.
I actually asked Big Plug if he would do the show, and you notice he left. He turned around and left.
We'll just have the last caller do the whole show.
Yeah.
Oh, what happened? Are you going to eat dinner when you get home, Julian?
I've eaten so much in the last 4 hours.
Oh, I don't stop think so.
What have you been? You've been the one that's been nibbling. What have you been nibbling
on? I had some shrimp pasta, shrimp Alfredo pasta. Delicious. I had a bagel with cream cheese.
Oh, stop.
I had those delicious, what were they? Those little apple muffins with the coconut sugar?
Yes, coconut sugar and almond flour.
And then what else do I have over here? I got a bag of chips.
Oh, my God.
All that in a bag of chips.
All that in a bag of chips?
You just carb loaded. You could run a marathon tomorrow.
I could, but I'm tired.
So what happens is you go sky high with the carbs, and then you crash, right?
Exactly.
No crashing.
Well, no crashing. We didn't get around to playing Jeff Boyle's song.
We'll do that next week.
Okay, next. Jeff Boyle, one of the most talented people we've ever met. And he did this song called Johnny and Me several years ago. And it starts out by mentioning the both of us. And it's just a cool... Okay.
Yes. We'll have fun next week. Not so much fun for the next 7 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Julian, you choose a number.
No, all the pressure at this hour. Okay. Okay. I normally don't pick because of proximity, but this guy, we're neighboring town, so I'm going to go with David in Addison.
Really?
Okay. Hi, David in Addison. Save us, David. Save us.
Okay, I don't know if I could save you completely, but I'll save you halfway. How's that sound?
Okay. Okay. All right. Take it away.
Okay. So I actually called not to win a prize or anything like that, but I've heard some dabbles about and conversations on WGN about crypto, and I don't know if everybody quite understands it. So I thought I'd like throw tidbits in with a little 2-minute elevator kind of overview.
Crypto? As in cryptocurrency?
Correct. Are you interested? Could I give you a little dabble?
Because see, my idea of crypto is that was Superman's dog name.
Well, there's a Dodge. You're close. There's a Dodge coin.
And he flies. So
we know what cryptocurrency is. Do I have any interest in it? No. This may come back to bite me in a year when you'll call up and say, you fool, you had no interest in it. I'm now a millionaire. Right?
So 99% of the coins are kind of like a kind of get rich quick scheme.
Yes, this is true.
And they're bait, but here's the thing. They're licensing.
Let me stop you.
I'm going to go back to Superman's dog.
And let me tell you this. It's too late for me to go here. You're obviously wide awake, David. I'm not processing this. We have talked with Patrick about doing a segment on this when we do our tech segments.
Yeah.
And he said, sure, he'd be happy to do that. You are welcome to call during that segment of the show. I am not processing what you're saying. I'm sorry. Julian, it's on you.
Sorry.
It's okay. Did he give you some tips on crypto?
And did he tell you that's what he was going to talk about, Julian?
He did not.
That's what I thought. Okay. So, here's a clue, folks. Don't call and say you're going to talk about something and then suddenly segue to something else like that. We're open to discussing anything, but I was sensing a little bit of an agenda there someplace, and I could be wrong. But no thanks, and I'm sticking with crypto as Superman's dog, the flying dog, who I understand.
Why was it crypto, though, if he was kryptonite was his?
Because he was from Krypton. Krypton was the planet.
I know that.
Thus, kryptonite was, you know, something from the planet would make it not good for
bring him
Superman.
To his knees, yeah.
But Crypto the dog, that was just because it was named after the planet.
I can't believe.
Because don't we all name our dogs after the planet that we're born on?
I can't even believe we're having this conversation. By the way, I want to thank all of you cat lovers out there who texted to say they enjoyed the story of how we ended up together because of a cat. Because of Muffin the cat, and very sweet.
Yep.
Because a number of people have a Muffin. They texted to say that's my cat's name too. So that's very sweet. And then we also heard from a number of people because we started out the show talking about deliveries this time of the year.
Yeah.
And I was
and again, let's be very clear. We were not zinging any of the hardworking delivery people.
We were just questioning.
Just kind of pondering, why do you not just open the door and leave it inside rather than...
Yes, we were kind of questioning.
Especially food.
Yes, food. The squirrels sit there and go, yay, look, it says on the side of the box, food.
The squirrels are up in the tree watching for the Amazon drivers.
Thank you for mentioning that, because somebody texted and said, why would you be ordering food? Are you talking about from the grocery store? I actually order. What are you doing? You suddenly went cross-eyed on me. You literally, your eyes crossed because you're looking. Is it moving?
No.
Okay. You were looking at your microphone and you're like, You had a cartoon face. I thought there was something crawling.
Relax, people. There's only about a minute left.
So what was I saying? It was so important. And then you're, Julian, what was I saying?
I was distracted by him crossing his eyes.
It was important.
As Spike said, you don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial. And there are reasons for that.
I just hope the boss isn't going to the bathroom about right now. And goes, what the heck going on? She's lost her mind. I feel like this is where I started. Because it sounded like I was drunk the first hour, then I sobered up, and now I'm drunk
full
again.
Circle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'll be driving, so don't worry about anything, folks.
Okay, I think we're out of words. Bye.